Good evening.
Good evening.
Our first order of business tonight is a public hearing. Public hearing on the Tompkins-Cortland Community College operating budget for 2019-2020. Is there anybody who would like to address the legislature on the TC3 budget? We have Dr. Arinthia Montague and Blixie Tage here from TC3. Would you like to say anything?
We'll just answer questions if anybody has any.
Okay. Would anybody from the public want to address TC3's budget? Any questions from the legislature? I would like to take a moment, Blixie, and just thank you for your years and years of service to the students in our community. Blixie's retiring, I think, at the end of the summer, somewhere, end of this month. And we will miss you. I know TC3 will miss you. And we thank you very, very much for being such a reliable, competent, knowledgeable, friendly source of information about everything related to TC3 for years. Thank you so much, and best of luck on your retirement, Blixie.
Thank you.
All right, questions, Deborah, and then Rich.
Well, I just wanted to tell Blixie how much we would miss her, and I hope that she'll record something, anything, in her wonderful, soothing voice so that we can play it anytime we want to.
I concur. Probably we're going to need that. Rich.
Yes, thank you, Blixie, for your many years of work. I also wanted to just give a tip of the hat to our sister county, Cortland County, in that we were able to reach a budget agreement this year that substantially increased funding, long overdue, I think, for TC3, and I was very happy that we were able to find common ground on that one this year.
Anything else for TC3? All right, and we'll close the public hearing and open the meeting for August 6, 2019 of the Tompkins County Legislature. Would you please join us in the Pledge of Allegiance?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic which
stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty
and justice for all.
Roll call of members, please.
Mrs. McBean Claiborne?
I am present.
Mr. McKenna?
Here.
Mr. Morey?
Here.
Mr. Sigler has asked to be excused. Ms. Black?
Here.
Ms. Champion?
Here.
Ms. Dawson?
Here.
Mr. Granison?
Here.
Mr. John?
Here.
Ms. Kellis?
Here.
Mr. Klein?
Here.
Ms. Corman?
Present.
Mr. Lane?
Here.
Ms. Robertson?
Here.
13 members present.
Thank you, Kathy. We're going to move things around a bit tonight, but the first order of business is a statement I'd like to make. Today's the 218th day of 2019. So far, there have been 253 mass shootings in our nation this year, more than one a day, according to Gun Violence Archive, a nonpartisan organization. This number does not count incidents with fewer than four people, including the murders of Chantel Grant and Andrea Stoudemire, who were part of a group called Mothers Against Senseless Killings. They were gunned down on Friday in Chicago on the corner where moms have been gathering for 5 years every day, every night, every week to try to curb gun violence. There's almost nothing new to say about all this, but nevertheless, we must stop business as usual and speak about these things. Words matter. The words that are said and the words that are left unsaid. Gun violence and hate affect every one of us. Just before this meeting, we had an active shooter training. In a few minutes, we will honor another American whose life was cut short way too soon by the longest war in our history. None of these shootings was inevitable, especially the one in El Paso. This did not have to happen. That means that the next one is not inevitable, nor the one after that, or the one after that. These assassins were not born hating. What in our society moved them to do this? In other countries, people don't kill each other so easily and so often. Tonight, we will accept a grant to, quote, prevent the cycle of abuse and violence in young families. And tomorrow, there will be another naturalization ceremony here. Tomorrow, welcoming 34 immigrants from 16 counties as they become full citizens of our country. We are not powerless. This is not inevitable. We need to hold our leaders accountable for this epidemic of hate and for the tools of hate being so readily available. We need to hold ourselves accountable as well. Words matter, but they're not enough. This has to change. I would ask that you join me in a moment of silence, please, for the many, many victims of shooting in our country. Thank you. I would like to ask the legislature's indulgence to turn to packet page 121. I'd like to do resolution Z and ask Annie Corman from Enfield and Trumansburg or Ulysses to come up. Thank you, Annie, for writing the resolution that we're going to be talking about now. And the Vanderzee family and friends, please come on up.
Thank you. We are honored here today to have some of the family of Sergeant James G. Johnston, or as his family and friends called him, Jamie. We're honored to have some of his family here today, so I really want to thank you for coming. Sergeant Johnston had a very good sense of humor. He had a dry sense of humor that he could look right at you and tell you a joke, and you'd have to catch yourself like, oh, that's one of the pranks he was pulling on me. He liked to make the room kind of bright. He would wear bright clothing. He would tell jokes. He had a great smile. And I unfortunately didn't get to meet him, but I've heard such great things and read such great things about him, and that I feel like I know him. One of his favorite bright colored clothing was Hawaiian shirts. He's also very smart. He rose very quickly through the ranks of the Army, and most importantly, he was very compassionate. He cared for his family, he cared for his community, and he cared for his country. It is in his honor that we are wearing Hawaiian shirts and dresses, and the Tompkins County Legislature offers this humble resolution. Whereas the people of Tompkins County were grieved to learn that United States Army Sergeant James Gregory Johnston died on June 25th, 2019 in Yurzagan province, Afghanistan, from injuries sustained in the service of his country while in combat. And whereas Sergeant Johnston was born on September 16th, 1994 in Tyler, Texas. And whereas Sergeant Johnston enlisted in the United States Army in 2000. Oh, I skipped one. Whereas he graduated from Trumansburg's Charles O. Dickerson High School in 2013, and that later that same year, he enlisted in the United States Army and was assigned to the 79th Ordnance Battalion, the 71st Ordnance Group in Fort Hood, Texas. And whereas Sergeant Johnston rendered honorable and vital service to the United States of America as an explosive ordnance disposal specialist in important theaters of operation at home and abroad, including tours of duty in Korea and Afghanistan. And whereas Sergeant Johnston received many decorations for his distinguished service, including meritorious service, a Bronze Star, and a Purple Heart. And whereas Sergeant Johnston was an active member of the Enfield Fire Department, and whereas in 2014, Sergeant Johnston married Krista Vanderzee, now Krista Johnston, who survives him. And whereas, in addition to his wife, Sergeant Johnston is survived by his mother, Megan Billiott, his father, Richard Johnston, as well as his in-laws, Tracy and Frederick Vanderzee, and many others, and we have Jamie's grandmother here and some other relatives here today also. Whereas on July 8, 2019, Sergeant Johnston was buried with full military honors in the Central Texas State Veterans Cemetery in Killeen, Texas. Now, therefore, be it resolved that members of the Tompkins County Legislature, on behalf of all the people of Tompkins County, hereby express their heartfelt condolences to Krista Johnston and to all the members of the family of Sergeant James G. Johnston for their terrible loss. Resolved further that a copy of this resolution be transmitted to the family of Sergeant James G. Johnston with our deepest gratitude for his exemplary service and our full and humble acknowledgement of the supreme sacrifice he has rendered for all of us.
Could I get a unanimous second on that resolution?
Second.
Second. Thank you.
Thank you, Annie.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. If he was here today, he would be hiding. He hated to be out in the public, but I'm glad to see it. James was a very, very special man to me. I wouldn't have let him marry my daughter if he wasn't. him and I had a very special relationship, and there's so much you could say about him, but he loved his country. That was the biggest thing. He loved his country. He loved his family. You couldn't say enough about his country. He was just a beautiful person. And I want to thank everybody. Thank you.
Thank you so much. All in favor of the resolution? That's certainly unanimous. Anyone else want to address the legislature? All right. Thank you so much. Thank you all very much. And Annie, thank you for your work on that. Really appreciate that. Among the things we need to move up for administrative reasons, Resolution O, a revised version, is in your red folder. And that I will ask Anna to move. What? Anna, Resolution O in the revised and your red folder. We wanted to do this so that this has to get transmitted to wherever it's going by midnight, right? Washington? Okay.
This is Resolution O, ID 8804, authorizing proposal for the Federal Transit Administration, FTA, Integrated Mobility Innovation Demonstration Program. I'd like to move that.
Seconded by Leslin. Discussion? Ready to vote. All in favor, please raise your hands. Any opposed? That's unanimous.
I would just say good luck, Dwight.
Thank you, Dwight.
Thank you so much for your
work. We've got a bunch of other things on the agenda on consent for you, but take this one and run. since the a number of people have come in since we got started. If anybody wants to address the legislature during public privilege of the floor, the blue forms are in the back there, and please go ahead and fill one out and send it on up. Next, I would like to have Mike Lane take Resolution W, page, would you say 97?
Absolutely.
Page 97. Go ahead, Mike.
Out of our budget committee, the adoption of the 2019-20 operating budget for Tompkins-Cortland Community College. I am moving this with a slight change in which we are going to indicate that the increase includes a 5% increase in the sponsorship share this year. I move it with that change.
All right. Thank you, Mike. Seconded by Glenn. So, Mike, is that in the first resolved?
Yes.
And, Kathy, you have the language for that? Okay. Discussion? I think as Mike said earlier, Rich said
Said it.
Okay. I'm very grateful that that Cortland County has agreed with our assessment that this was an important investment to make this year, to make this kind of an increase, and we look forward to working with the college, with Dr. Montague and with Blixie's successor, and Ray Slaughter here as the chair of the board on strengthening TC3 and helping to a brighter future. Anything else from the legislature? Mike Lane.
I just want to say this is the culmination of a very long process and thorough process by the TC3 administration and its board of trustees, and in conjunction, as Rich said, with the Cortland County Legislature. It's been no secret that they've had a tough time this year because of enrollment challenges, and that they are working their way through. We don't envy them the difficult choices they have to make, but we know they're up to it, and we know we will have a strong college which will continue as things get better.
Ready to vote. All in favor of Resolution W with that one change? Any opposed? Thank you very much. That's unanimous. Thank you so much. Enjoy the rest of your evening. You're welcome to stay, but enjoy the rest of your evening and keep up the great work. And thank you, Blixie, for everything. Thank you, Blixie. All right. Kathy, is that all the special stuff?
Yes.
Okay. I need to let you know that I have to ask for an executive session tonight, first to talk about a personnel issue about a specific person, and then to discuss real estate negotiations. So go to public privilege of the floor. You have that? By signing a form, agree to the following. Agree to a three-minute time limit. I agree not to raise my voice. I agree not to use lewd, obscene, profane, slanderous, or libelous language or speak or act in a manner that would tend to incite a breach of the peace. I agree to not to speak about county personnel matters. Personnel matters include comments about the job performance of named county employees other than elected officials. After 3 minutes, I agree to leave the microphone and yield the floor. Transferring time to another person is not permitted. I agree that if I cause a disruption and am asked to leave, I will leave the chambers. I have first Jim Moravec and then Martin Kelly. Jim Moravec. Hi, Jim, my next-door neighbor.
Thank you, Martha. I'm here to talk about the rifle initiative that's on the agenda. I'm a longtime resident of Tompkins County. I grew up on West Dryden Road on a small farm. I went to Cornell University, got a commission as a second lieutenant, went into the Army Reserve, and I retired as a lieutenant colonel. During that time, my battalion was assigned to run rifle ranges and provide marksmanship training for the training units at Fort Leonard Wood. My experience with big game hunting comes after many years living on the farm. I spent half a decade, both shotguns and rifles. Rifles have always been allowed in the county for small game, coyotes, woodchucks, and whatever. Based on my experience, I have found the superior accuracy of the rifle far exceeds that of a shotgun. The results of a better accurate shot and better bullet placement results in less wounding of the animal. The ballistics of a rifle bullet far exceed those of a shotgun slug. Rifle bullets on the market today are now designed to ensure clean and humane kills without fully penetrating the body of the animal and less chance of a ricochet. The rifle bullets travel at much higher speeds than a shotgun slug. The speed of a modern bullet design results in bullets that hit something like a rock or a soil, that they will fragment and not go off in some uncontrolled direction. In my opinion, given that the right to hunt big game with a rifle, the deer harvest will increase in Tompkins County. And we already have an overabundance of deer, and resulting in more and more car collisions and spread of Lyme disease. The counties around Tompkins have authorized hunting for big game, and to my knowledge, there have not been any incidences. It's ironic that I travel 10 miles to the east, as Martha knows. I can hunt in Tioga County and use a rifle, but if I hunt in my own backyard or up in my property, I cannot. With all that said, let's think the bottom line. All hunters, regardless, either shotgun or a rifle, must consider what's behind the target and what's around the target before they shoot. This is a responsibility that they cannot get away from, and it's very important that they think about that at every minute. I encourage the committee to approve this initiative and feel that that rifle usage is just as safe as a shotgun usage.
Thank you, Jim. Martin Kelly and then Robert Lynch.
Good evening. I am Martin Kelly. I am a little bit taller. I am a hunter safety instructor. I've done that for about 10 years. I've been my entire adult life. I have been a hunter. And so anyways, over the last 20 years, gun-related, the DEC calls them shooting incidents, has declined steadily over the last 20 years, in large part, I'm proud to say, due to in small part to my efforts, but largely my peers and everything for the Hunter Safety Instruction Program. So that has come down like that. The counties around us and many in New York State have authorized the use of rifles where they had been prohibited in the past. Those areas have come down in parallel with where the shotgun hunting, where it's restricted to the shotgun hunting like it is now. So statistically, they are exactly the same. So I would strongly ask that you authorize the rifle hunting. As the gentleman before me said, the rifles are simply more accurate, and you can get a cleaner kill and less chance of other problems. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Kelly. Robert Lynch and then Thomas Shelley.
Good evening. It's August, but I'm here to talk snowballs. Yep, snowballs. Governmental snowballs. The kind where somebody's bright idea gets snowballed into a $20 million boondoggle of a snowman. It happens this way. Inspiration leads to a plan. The plan leads to a project. And before too long, everybody's invested so much time, effort, and money and made so many promises that no one dares to turn back. Well, turn back tonight. Stop before you start. Reject, table, or send back to committee your resolution that would commit county monies to study a new joint facility for Ithaca City Police and the county sheriff's departments at a preferred location along Elmira Road. Tonight's resolution, sadly, is silent as to the study's cost, but we do know what the joint public safety facility might cost us. According to the Kingsbury report, it would cost $19 to $24 million. Just to put that in perspective, $24 million would be twice the price of the new county office building you're planning off Sears Street. But the snowball keeps rolling. One county legislator, a woman I respect, speaking recently at a municipal meeting I attended, said that to her, it doesn't stop there. Quote, I would not want us to co-locate the sheriff's department and then leave the jail by itself. I would like to see the jail come with it, close quote. A new jail isn't even included in the $24 million cost estimate. Our jail populations are decreasing, not increasing. Our Warren Road Jail can and should be renovated instead. The existing sheriff's office on Warren Road is more central to our county. Elmira Road is not. The Elmira Road site lies in a floodplain. The joint arrangement would disproportionately benefit the city, which shouldn't even be putting the police station on Elmira Road in the first place. It's too far from downtown. The only way a joint facility would make sense is to resurrect an idea nobody's talked about for almost 4 years, namely the actual merger of the city and county law enforcement. It's a worthy idea, but it's also a political hot potato. It's not likely to be raised again anytime soon. Unless and until those consolidation talks resume, please, put the $20 million joint facility on hold. Don't even study it. It may have been a good idea once, but not here, not now. Don't get emotionally and financially committed, and at least tell us what the study is going to cost. Leave this governmental snowball out to melt in the hot August sun. Thank you.
Thank you, Robert. Thomas Shelby, Shelley, and then Ronnie Hardaway.
Thank you. Well done, by the way. I didn't realize I was participating in honoring Sergeant Johnson, but I am. I have my Hawaiian shirt on. He was a wonderful person. And first, I would like to congratulate Katie and her planning department on the wonderful long list of accomplishments they're going to discuss later this evening. Job very well done over the years. And I'm on the EMC, so we appreciate everything the planning department does. I have two topics. The first one is the shared services again. I wish Mike Ziegler was here because I hardly ever agree with Mike Ziegler about anything, and I'm sure he'd be disappointed, you know, to hear that I do. But I also disagree with the idea of merging the sheriff's department and the police department. I think there's so many other things that need our money and our attention and deserve a lot more study and consideration before we go to that level of merging of services. And Mike, this week it would be now July 30th issue of the Tompkins Weekly had a little op-ed, which he often has, and he mentioned the fact that there are many other things like planning departments, road departments, clerks, attorneys, public information services, technology services for the county and the city, all of which could be probably a lot cheaper merged and have a lot more beneficial outcome in the long run than initially merging the sheriff's office and the police department in a co-house facility. So that's my take on that. My other topic is lead in the environment. I've spoken to the PDEC about lead in the environment. In the previous issue, two issues back of Tompkins Weekly, I had an article on lead in the environment. It's called Why We Need to Get the Lead Out. I am very, very opposed to lead ammunition being used in our environment. California just recently banned most use of lead shot in the environment. For obvious reasons, lead is very toxic and causes a lot of deaths of animals and birds every year, et cetera. And I encourage you to look at this article on lead in the environment, and hopefully we can find some other solutions to this kind of situation rather than just... I'm not opposed to rifles and shotguns or anything else being used for hunting. I think hunting is a good thing. People have to feed themselves, and we have a severe overpopulation of deer, as the gentleman mentioned. I'm just very concerned about the lead out there and the long-term effects it's going to have. Thank you very much. Have a wonderful and productive meeting.
Thank you very much, Tom. Ronnie Hardaway and then Ray Schlatter.
I thank the legislature for an opportunity to speak about the proposed study on co-locating the Ithaca Police Department, the County Sheriff's Department, and the County Jail. The proposed study brings to mind the age-old phrase, just because you can doesn't mean you should. As elected representatives from 14 districts, you control the fiscal power of our county's budget. This fiscal power comes with an entrusted responsibility to use taxpayer money responsibly for the greater good of the entire county. The scope and complexity of co-locating different law enforcement cultures onto one campus and including a county jail on or near that campus seem to beckon a feasibility study like the one under consideration. However, as legislators, you should also perceive and acknowledge the scope and complexities of your districts, their constituents, and their law enforcement needs. Just because an expensive co-location study calls, should you as a legislature heed that call when a voice of common sense says no? The County Sheriff's Department and the county jail have worked well for decades in their current Lansing location. The Ithaca Police Department has served the city well for decades in their city location. County taxpayers are not demanding a co-location of these two departments, nor are they demanding a feasibility study. This study appears to be the city's common council and the legislature proposing a first step toward a solution in search of a problem. A $200,000 study on a co-location campus within the city of Ithaca invests valuable taxpayer money on a risky, multi-decade investment. The promise of saving money by consolidating land and buildings does not automatically include the certainty that two law enforcement cultures will work without interdepartmental conflicts and distractions from their duties. The potential savings from co-location of county and city law enforcement departments do not override the near-certain problems that will arise from the co-location. Divided city and county oversight regarding their staff at the site add governmental chaos. Divided loyalties of deputies and officers to their respective departments add unnecessary personnel conflicts. Divided county and city budget streams add discontent over unequal salaries and benefits. As a Village of Lansing resident and a county taxpayer, I respectfully urge the county legislature to reject the proposed feasibility study on co-location. Just because you can doesn't mean you should.
Thank you, Ronnie. I'm going to take an unusual step and correct a couple of things, facts. The county has not started talking about this because the city said we should talk about it. We've been talking about what to do about the law enforcement facility for a long, long time, recognizing that the jail is outdated and very, very worn, recognizing that even though our population is happily very much lower than it used to be, we don't have enough programming space, we don't have enough medical space, and we've done studies already for going back a couple of years about how we might renovate the jail, and if we could move the sheriff, the road patrol operations and the civil division out of that building, would we have an opportunity to renovate the jail and do a better job by our inmates and our staff? So this is not something that originated with the city. It is not something that originated because, you know, we were looking for a study to do. The estimate for the study has been $100,000, not $200,000. I just wanted to put out those couple of pieces of information because very often the public speaks and then leaves, and we don't always get a chance to have a conversation. So I just thought I would correct the record on a couple of things there. Got Ray Schlatter, then Scott Miller.
Good evening. I'm Ray Schlatter, and I'm a resident of the city of Ithaca. I'm also obviously a resident of the county, and I'm here to speak in favor of Resolution X. And though I have great respect, affection, and Bob and I go back many, 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 many years, I would ask that you not allow his eloquence to lead to a meltdown of, to a meltdown of pragmatism and reason. What this resolution is doing is not calling for the merger of the police and the sheriff department, the city police and the sheriff's department. What it is doing is not calling for a commitment to even continuing that discussion. What this is doing is it is completing the third leg of a very important study that this community engaged at no cost to the community, but at great volunteer efforts of a number of folks in the Municipal Court Task Force. We completed our work back in July of 16, 3 years ago. We came up with essentially a three-legged solution. The three-legged solution means that this thing can't stand, this stool can't stand unless all three legs are in play. And what are they? Number one, we needed a third county court judge. Why? Because we have all of these great courts that we wanted to engage, mental health court, youth court, DWI court. In other words, these were the things we wanted to do. And God bless you, your folks worked hard. You had great leadership with Martha, and we ended up with a third county court judge. Second leg, we needed the cooperation of the local courts. Why? Because we needed them to coordinate scheduling. We needed them to come up with no bail release policies. We needed them to come up with ways by which we could coordinate and minimize the expense of the assigned counsel program, which is a critical part of the funding of this agency, of this legislature, to coordinate them so that we can reduce those costs. We've got that. We're on our way. It's working. And what was the third leg? The third leg was these procedural and structural consolidations, not mergers of police departments, but rather an after-hours arraignment part, rather some of the backroom consolidation of operations so that we can, as a community, can recognize that you shouldn't have to, somebody in Groton who's arrested, in Trumansburg who's arrested, shouldn't have to be transported all the way with law support, all the way to Lansing to be held for a judge to find for arraignment, etc. But rather, we needed to come up with a more centralized after-hours arraignment part. That is a critical part of where we're going with this. Funding this study will simply mean that we are going to continue looking at ways to render these efficiencies. Not funding the study is going to eliminate this opportunity once and for all, which would be a critical mistake. So for $100,000 or whatever it's going to cost, and believe me, as a city taxpayer and as a county taxpayer, I'm paying double. It's worth it, and I encourage you to support. Thanks.
Thank you, Ray. Scott Miller and then Don Harto.
Good evening, everyone. I'm Scott Miller. I've been one of the Ithaca City Court judges since 2013, and I was on the committee that Ray chaired, and we met for, I think, more than 2 years and studied the municipal courts. I'm speaking in favor of the co-location resolution. I would not be speaking in favor of a resolution if the resolution involved discussing merging the Ithaca Police Department with the Sheriff's Department, and that is not what this resolution is about. I want to focus on what our task force found, and what was recommended is we desperately need a centralized after-hours arraignment facility. And having been city court judge for 7 years, I can tell you that the public is not aware of the fact that their taxpayer dollars are being wasted, because we have sheriff deputies that take people into custody at night, and there isn't a holding facility, so the deputies begin making phone calls to see what local town justice may be available. And that's not an easy task. It doesn't. It may take quite a bit of effort to find a town justice. It doesn't happen in half an hour or even an hour. Sometimes it could take several hours. And there's no holding facility for someone that is just charged with an offense. The Ithaca Police Department goes through that same process. They can usually get me or Judge Wallace pretty quickly, but sometimes Judge Wallace and I, or I are we're delayed, and it. having one person who's been arrested and presumed innocent waiting to go in front of a judge, that takes several law enforcement officers off the road. So we have two Ithaca Police Department officers that are off the road and not patrolling and not involved in investigations because they have to wait for a judge to arrive. The same thing happens with the sheriff deputies when they have someone in custody. And then there's all this duplication of resources when the sheriff can't find a town or village justice, and then they'll end up calling one of the city court judges, and we can serve in that capacity and do an arraignment for a sheriff deputy. Right now, because we don't have a centralized arraignment facility that both the Ithaca police officers and the sheriff's department needs, we have this duplication of effort, and we have officers taken off the road. It's got to be a lot more than $100,000 in overtime with all of those officers who are taken off the road, which causes other officers not to be able to go home because those officers need to stay on the road. So I'm in favor of a feasibility study if it focuses on things such as where do we have duplication occurring between the Ithaca Police Department and the sheriff, and how would a co-location of some resources, such as a centralized arraignment facility, that could eliminate all this duplication of resources. So if that's the focus, I'm in favor of it. But I don't read this resolution as a merger of the two law enforcement agencies, and I certainly wouldn't support that.
Thank you very much, Scott. Don Hardhill, and if anybody else who's come in wants to fill out a blue form, that would be fine. And I would just invite Don and Ronnie to come back as municipal officials anytime. We have a time slot for reports from your municipalities, and we'd love to welcome you on any general report that you'd like to make. But right now you've got 3 minutes as a member of the public. Thank you,
Mayor. I'll try to be even briefer than that. I wrote all of you a letter a week or so ago expressing my concern about combining in a joint facility the Ithaca Police Department and the county sheriff. And the reason for my concern is that some of the locations that have been talked about, the response time for village residents and the town of Lansing residents is going to be increased by at least a factor of two. And so that's where I'm coming from. It's really that concern about the response. I am also in support of some sort of central booking facility where the kinds of things that Scott just mentioned can take place. But I think that should be very clearly understood in terms of what this feasibility study is actually doing. Thank you.
Thank you very much. That's the last blue card I have. All right. For municipal officials, I have, I see George McGonigal from the City Council there. Hello, George. Welcome. Thanks for coming.
Hello.
Hold on. Folks, I think we are going to move up. No, we got two presentations. We're going to do the presentations first. All right. We are going to move up the law enforcement resolution, but there will be a few other things first. So it's not imminent, but it's also not at the end of the agenda like it is in the packet. So, all right. Thank you very much. Hi, George.
Good evening. Just to say about this feasibility study, the Common Council did vote to pay for the study, but that does not mean that members of council are necessarily for or against combined. It's not even combined. It's like it would be co-located. Thank you. And of course, the jail is another issue. But it's hard to understand something unless you study it. So that's why we voted to study it. As far as city news, we've just passed the midway point of the summer. Our increased staff at Board of Public at Department of Public Works is busy and doing a lot of paving, a lot of plumbing, a lot of water work. I think that's a good thing. We're about to start our budget process in the next month or so, and the department heads are busy working on their budgets as we speak. The agenda for tomorrow's meeting is quite light, but one of the things that we're going to vote on is funding for the Blue Way Trail, docks. It's a cooperation with the county, and I suspect that's going to pass. I just want to thank you for honoring Sergeant Johnson. It's so important, and it makes me proud. I'm glad I was here for that. So I thank you very much. That's all I've got. I'll answer questions.
Thank you so much, George. Any questions for George? Oh, man, you're off easy tonight. All right. Thank you so much for coming. We appreciate your explaining the council's vote on that resolution. All right. Legislator privilege of the floor, and then we have two presentations. So, legislators? Amanda.
Thank you. I'm going to talk a little bit about poetry for a minute. I've talked to a couple people about poetry. It's come up in a couple places. Last week I attended the screening of the movie Litany for Survival about Audre Lorde. Annie was there as well. If you don't know who Audre Lorde was, you really should. She was a black woman, a lesbian, feminist, activist, a writer, a teacher, and she inspired a lot of people. She believed, and I believe with her, that poetry is very important and that it changes people's lives. After the movie, numerous people spoke about their experiences, either knowing her or reading her work, and how it had literally saved them. We at GEO, we've been talking a little bit about poetry because we have ordered a Poet Laureate plaque to honor, our previous and current and eventually future Poets Laureate in Tompkins County. And that quote is, and the quote actually comes from Audre Lorde. Poetry is not only dream and vision, it is the skeleton architecture of our lives. Poetry is not a luxury, is also what Lorde says. And it's been kind of a rough week. As Martha said, we had an active shooter training earlier today, and there's a lot of violence in the world. And for me, poetry is really a way to combat that and change perspective. You may remember that our current Poet Laureate is Melissa Tuckey, and she gave a reading earlier this year. Last year she published this book called Ghost Fishing, an eco-justice poetry anthology. She's very involved in social justice work. Eco-justice is the intersection of environmental activism and social justice. And this book is amazing. I highly recommend you pick it up and read a little bit. There's a lot of great things in here. And that leads me to a poem that I want to read. It's the first item in the book, even before the table of contents. And to me, this poem shares what poetry can do. And how poetry can deeply affect us. It's by Ross Gay, and it's about Eric Garner. A small needful fact is that Eric Garner worked for some time for the Parks and Rec Horticulture Department, which means perhaps that with his very large hands, perhaps in all likelihood, he put gently into the earth some plants, which most likely, some of them, in all likelihood, continue to grow, continue to do what such plants do, like house and feed small and necessary creatures, like being pleasant to touch and smell, like converting sunlight into food, like making it easier for us to breathe. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Amanda. I challenge anyone to follow that. I'm sorry. Seriously.
Oh, really?
I was about to.
Go, Leslie.
I was about to give you all a rendition of one of my very first performances at the Kitchen Theater.
We would be.
Lord, please, but I'll save it.
No. Come on.
Don't flip like that, Martha. No, I'm kidding.
Come on, Leslie.
You just have to come pay to see me.
No, come on. You just outed yourself. Come on. What do you have?
It's all good. Okay.
Okay. Rich.
I would like to put my colleague on the spot because I read in the Ithaca Journal, and I'm not going to try to pronounce her name, but I saw her run and jump, EJ, and she had such great things, and her family had great things to say about you. And I was wondering if you could just talk for a moment about this young woman who has made us all proud.
Oh, thank you so very much, Rich. I've been in a whirlwind with so much going on. We are extremely proud of EJ Ona. EJ and her family came here to the United States and came to Ithaca. I don't remember how many years ago, but she was 7 years old. And they landed on the doorsteps of us at GIAC, just looking for support and integration into the community. They are originally from Nigeria, lived in Germany for a while. EJ, we began our track and field GIAC Navigators program. If anybody knows me, you know I'm a sports nut, so anything that has to do with the sports, I'm there. But we also had a staff member who was really into coaching track and field. We found her niche, and that happened. EJ was a part of that program. She also had arms and legs for these, and so they thought she should play basketball. She hated it, hated that basketball. The best part of it for her was the running. That's what she liked, and the jumping. So she fell in love in the track and field program, and we would travel all over the GIAC Navigators, taking them to track meets everywhere. And she became one of the standouts in local and regional meets in both the 400 meters and her long jump. She graduated last year. From Ithaca High School. She went on to be an Ithaca High School track athlete and track star and has been competing throughout this country and doing very well. Went on to the University of Albany, and I would consider it a good feat as a freshman, made the track team. Most freshmen don't do that. So she's very good and very humble. It's one thing I really appreciate about her. And this this past July, there, I don't remember what date it was, somewhere around the 22nd or 23rd, she went on to represent the United States in the Pan American Games with well over, I don't know, 40-something countries competing, the under-20 Pan American Games. She went there for the international experience and medaled. So we were very proud of her. She brought home the bronze medal. And, you know, I pulled it up on my computer so I can watch it, of course. And just to hear the national anthem playing, her coach sent us video, and seeing both her and the first place, the person who took first place, was an American as well, and somebody AJ had competed against, and she had won against in other competitions locally. This little fact, the winning jump that the gold medalist had, which I said Claire, she's an American, is EJ's best. That's her personal best. So if she had jumped her personal best, she would have medaled even higher. So we're very proud of her. We're very proud of the stuff that we're doing at GIAC. I was coming up with Ray in the elevator and just saying it's It's just happening. I don't know what's going on, but it's just happening. And we're thankful for all your support, because many of you have been there. Shauna Skitzer at GIEC. You know, her son learned to cook chicken wings at GIEC. We do everything. We don't just train athletes, but we also recognize that, you know, life skills are important, are very important. So to E.J. Ona, who not only represented Ithaca and Tompkins County, but the United States of America, I want to give her big kudos for that. She's got her eyes on the Olympics, and I think she can make it. She is dedicated to training and training very hard, and I think she can make it. So thank you, Rich, for bringing that up, and for all the media who covered that story, because not often, you know, we hear about things like this that happen for us. You know, we hear when the Stanley Cup and Dustin Brown comes in with it, you know, and this big Ithaca thing. But for a young person, especially a young lady and a young African-American young lady, that was a big deal and a huge deal to us at GIEC, and quite an inspiration for so many others. So again, thank you for bringing it up, and kudos to EJE from all of us in the legislature.
That's great. Thank you. Wonderful story. That's exciting. Very good. Anything else? Anybody else? Mike Lane.
Martha, thank you for setting the tone with your words earlier about what's happened in the last few days, which is just adding on to what's happened with the mass killings in this country for too long. People used to have machine guns, Tommy guns, for example. We banned them. We said there's no reason for average people to have them. People would have sawed-off shotguns, which would spread the pellets that come out of them and become very, very dangerous and very, very killing machines. They had other kinds of ordinances. They used to have bring home shells from the Army, or they would have hand grenades or things like that. And we said, no, you can't do that. They're too dangerous. Then there are the assault guns. The AK-47s, the AK-15s, which were the quote-unquote civilian version of them that we have now, that perhaps will be used for hunting deer, I don't know. We have to think about what we are doing, allowing weapons of war to be out there on the streets, to be available to folks that don't think the way most people think. And it's easy to say, oh, these folks are all mental problems. But I think they are just so caught up in the society or their own compartment, their own silo, listening on the internet to horrible things from the white nationalists and other groups that say so much evil about the people of our country who join us, the immigrants, the people of different religion, the people of different racial background, national origin, different gender identity. They talk about, we talk about these things, but we haven't done very much about it. We need to. I saw a chart very recently talking about the number of gun murders by states. I was glad that New York was one of the lower ones. Places like Texas were 4, 5, 6 times as large as some of the Northeast states that do have some gun control there. We're not talking about stopping anybody from hunting. We aren't stopping anybody from collecting. We are talking about not being able to transfer your gun to your son or your daughter. We're talking about having guns that can kill too many people too quickly. I heard one report that said that the shooter in Dayton had a barrel magazine that held 100 shots, and that in less than a minute he shot and killed and wounded all of those people before he was shot in less than a minute by a police officer or officers who were there, or shot himself. I don't know which happened, but these high capacity magazines are not needed. I'm glad to see New York has banned bump stocks, which I'd never even heard of before the Las Vegas shootings. I'll come to a conclusion here, but I just want you to know that I feel very, very strongly that we have to take out the weapons of war from availability. We have to preserve our right to bear arms, but we aren't at war with our own people, and we don't need those kinds of weapons out there. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mike. Absolutely agree. Anyone else? Leslie.
That was Rich asking me. This is my turn now. You know, Amanda started to talk about Audre Lorde, one of my favorite poets, and I want to take a moment to also recognize the passing of a Nobel laureate and author, Toni Morrison. Toni Morrison was the first African-American woman to receive the Nobel Prize for Literature, also Pulitzer Prize, and is known for her writings about freedom and slavery and women's empowerment. So I do want to recognize her passing yesterday, the 5th. That was yesterday? Yep, yesterday. And the country certainly, and especially the African-American community, certainly has lost an icon. And also mention her and some of her work. I encourage folks to read it. I think it was Toni Morrison who said, if I'm wrong, somebody's going to correct me, fact-checking, you know, if there's a book you want to read and it's not written yet, you should write it, something like that. And means that it's waiting for you to write it. Very dynamic, but also I acknowledge her because somewhere in the late 90s, she visited us here, came here and visited with us in Tompkins County at the St. James Amy Zion Church right there in the historic South Side, and an opportunity to meet her and just, you know, some of the community members and to engage with her. So thanks to Toni for her amazing work, and may she rest in peace. I just wanted to share that. I also wanted to share, since we were talking about EJE and GIEC and the stuff, that coming up the weekend of September 7th and 8th, GIEC is engaging in a new sports tourism event that we hope to bring and blow up in Tompkins County, and that's the Gus Macker basketball, 3-on-3 basketball tournament. Gus Macker is a 35-plus-year-old national, respected basketball tournament from age 7 to 70. You're invited to play. So, Rich, go ahead, get two of your friends, and come play some 3-on-3 ball. Something like 27 basketball courts will be at the grounds of Ithaca High School, and everyone is encouraged to come out and support this new event that we hope will bring a lot of people spending money and staying overnight. Teams come from all over and stay in our hotels, which adds to our tourism dollars. So we're excited about that opportunity. And at the same time, We know that families are bringing young children. They want something to do. And we chose at that time to celebrate the well over 72 cultures, unique cultures, that we researched and found living and participating in Tompkins County in what we're calling the GIAC Festival of Nations. So as many of those cultures that we are able to get come and participate, not only to share product and food, but stories and history and so much about themselves and information, and we encourage the public to join us. Again, September 7th, the festival is on that one day, 7th and 8th of September, that first weekend, is the Gus Macker Tournament at the grounds of Ithaca High School. So please mark your calendars and come on down. Also, you're welcome to volunteer, so call GIAC 272-3622 if you're interested in volunteering.
Thank you, Leslyn. Anna.
I was toying on whether or not I wanted to bring this up, but I found so often that things come up that we don't feel prepared for because we wait until it comes out in the public. And when it comes to legal issues, sometimes that's too late. So I'm bringing up something because I know people here are, you know, majority of people are very pro-environment. And we have a county of environmental activists that have done amazing work in the fracking world. Something that I brought up to a few of my colleagues yesterday, but have read further on this. It's just a concern of mine, so I am. It's a warning, I guess, for all of us to be aware of. There was a recent decision by the Supreme Court, and this was an overturn of a case, Nick versus Township of Scott in Pennsylvania. I'll read briefly because I'm not a lawyer and I don't want to bungle it. But Mary Rose Nick challenged an ordinance passed by the Township of Scott in Pennsylvania, arguing that the ordinance violated the taking clause of the Fifth Amendment. Under an earlier Supreme Court case, Williamson County Regional Planning Commission versus Hamilton Bank, plaintiffs are required to exhaust all state court remedies before filing a takings claim in federal court. So the Third Circuit affirmed this. But the U.S. Supreme Court accepted the appeal to consider whether it should overrule the exhaustion requirement under this previous case. And it was heard in 2018. There was a 4-4 decision. But when Kavanaugh was appointed, there was a reopening in earlier this year. And the ultimate decision was an overturning of this decision. I have since read cases now of the attempt previous to this case, the attempt to for people who want fracking on their private property in New York State, people were not pursuing it because the exhaustive process that they would have to go through the New York court system and the climate in the New York court systems prevented a lot of people from doing that. What this would allow for is bypassing the entire state process and suing directly at the federal level. And so there are people and websites that have been established over the last couple months for people who are organizing to take that path. And my concern is that this could open up doors to that argument of fracking in New York State that we so valiantly fought. It was hard won in New York State. And I want us to be prepared. So this is just as much a shout out to this community. Hopefully there are a lot of people listening. Hopefully people in this room study it, understand it, share it with the legal community, because it could potentially lead to a fight on our hands here. And I would love to see it end again the way the last round did. So wanted to share.
Thank you, Anna. Shauna, did you have your hand up?
Yeah, I just want to say congratulations to the Alcohol and Drug Council. A huge thanks goes out to Director Angela Sullivan and her staff. They have managed to secure a $6.9 million grant in funding to add a 40-bed medically supervised withdrawal or detox center in our community, which is so desperately needed. So. Also, I want to thank Martha and Jason. They worked really hard to also secure these funds. So we really, this is really a gift to our community. Secondly, I want to give a huge shout out to the Hangar Theater and their production of Kinky Boots. Was one of the best productions, and I know that I say that every single time I go to the Hangar Theater, but was really one of the best productions I've seen. This weekend they start up with Little Women. So get your tickets.
All right. Thanks very much. All right. It's really like we have two presentations. Annie, go ahead.
I just want to say very quickly that the family of Sergeant Johnston wanted me to say thank you for all the people that wore bright colored clothes and to do this resolution that we did tonight. They said it's very difficult to be sad because there's been such an outpouring of support from everybody. So thank you very much.
Thank you again. All right, we good? All right, I would like to welcome to our to the table Annette Birdsall, Tompkins County Public Library, and Rod Howe, Director of the History Center. Rod also is a member of the Ithaca Town Board, so the invitation is open, and especially we understand you might be supervisor of the Town of Ithaca next year. We'd love to have you come here as a municipal official and do some updates every so often. Welcome, Annette and Rod. Thanks so much for coming.
People keep reminding me there's an election.
Yeah, there's an election, yeah. We had a couple of folks had the opportunity to be present on a Saturday when there was when the library had a celebration of opening of the time capsule from the old library building, and I invited Rod and Annette here to tell us about what was found.
Right, and we are absolutely delighted to talk about the time capsule again because this was a celebration of the county, the library, and the History Center coming together in renewed support for what was possible when we do come together in this way. And so Rod is going to talk a little bit about some of the things, and then I'll share some of the contents, and we'll turn it back to Rod for our future plans to continue this wonderful love for the library and our work together.
Thanks, Annette. So we're passing around. The most popular item were these little time capsules that kids put together. I think they actually started 2 or 3 years before the library was built, so there's different years on them. And so many people showed up that day who remembered filling in one of these time capsules. So we hope you'll take a I need these back. These are going to be part of the archive. So you don't get to keep these. The milk can will be passed back around so you can put everything back in. You don't have to put them back in the time capsule. That's really hard to do. So people showed up saying, I want to open up my time capsule. Okay, well, there were like thousands of time capsules. So we said, just take one and read it. But we have several names of folks who have volunteered to come back and help us open all these time capsules because, of course, they're hoping they're going to find the one that they wrote. And then we'll photograph them and they'll become part of the permanent archive. So if any of you are interested in, it's going to be a fairly laborious process. These are very small pieces of paper. But they cover lots of different topics. Some have one word. Some have writing on the front and back. Some have little drawings. So that's been fun. You know, we didn't bring the things from the time capsule. It's all going to be archived at the History Center. But it does remind us that technology changes. Does anyone have a machine that we can listen to the 16-millimeter tape on?
I'm afraid I might have
to do at the library.
And it was interesting as we were waiting to come up here, looking at the original program from April 22nd, 1968. You know, many of you know I grew up here in Lansing, and I actually recognize a lot of the, I was 12 at the time, I recognize a lot of the names. So you'll have to come to the History Center and look at the program from 1968. So I will say that we cheated a little bit that day. It was a copper box that was put in the cornerstone, and we had it open in advance. It took them a while, county staff, to open it, and they had to use a torch, and I was afraid that something would catch fire inside, but nothing did. So we pretended that I think Jason did this.
Very well.
I think we fooled everyone. You were just strong. You just lifted that lid right off. And I'll just finish. Annette will tell you what's in it, but you know, I've already said this is all going to be archived. It's going to be very participatory in terms of this aspect because there really are thousands and thousands of these time capsules. And again, I do have to collect them before I leave.
So even though we were in the position of having to open the capsule ahead of time because that weld was a serious closure, but it protected the capsules from any damage, it was still a surprise because we didn't know that the time capsules were actually capsules. So we had that element in the room, and there was just so much joy. And I think the students who participated in 1968 really were there to recognize that this was a time when we moved from the Cornell Public Library to the Tompkins County Public Library. We were an association library, and we became a municipal library with the support of the county supervisors of that time. And the event that we held actually rekindled that spirit, I think, for the community, for the library, for the county, for those of us in attendance. We keep hearing how delightful it was to participate in this way that we really do work together for the sustainability of the health and the learning community that we share. So the Times capsule contained not only these little capsules, but things that were of import to the day. So President Bahar gave the opening remarks because it was the founding year of TC3. So isn't that wonderful to celebrate this evening? There was also what Rod had shared with the this recording of Morris Bishop's commencement ceremony, because Cornell, the first commencement for Cornell was held in the library. As you know, the library was founded by Ezra, and so it was very fitting that that connection was celebrated when the with the rededication of the time capsule in the new building. It also was a coming together of the Finger Lakes Library System, sharing space with the library, so back to shared services, which we have been doing for a long time. And so the minutes of the resolution of the Tompkins County Supervisors, the minutes of the Cornell Public Library Association Directors, and the minutes of the Finger Lakes Library Association were also part of the documents contained in the capsule. They also contained a copy of the Ithaca Journal. It was a celebration of their anniversary edition. So right from the beginning, this was an archive. People did wonder if we were going to re-archive the materials, but we know that we want to have them on display. And so the highlight of the capsule, obviously, were these little capsules, and people were calling the library prior to the event saying, "You have my time capsule." And I said, "Huh." We did uncover the time capsule, and we'll have an opening, and I would keep telling them that. But as you know, when we opened it and saw all of these little tiny gelatin capsules, I finally understood what they meant. And so we wanted to give you a chance to read a few of the messages if you wanted to.
All right. Anybody have one there? Anna?
I have three that are quite fabulous. This is very cute.
Well, she said take a few.
So I took a few. Books are fun. Books are fun. Books are fun for everyone. Some are easy. Some are hard. Made of paper and of card. easy fiction biography sports written by Christopher and by Schwartz.
I just think that is like the cutest thing ever.
Oh. All right, somebody else? Shauna?
I have, in the past month, 10 unidentified flying objects have been sighted. I wonder if they were real.
There was a lot of UFO sightings in that area around this time. So.
Yeah, it was the 60s, guys. Come on. I mean, really? Not sure why. Leslin.
Well, given that we're talking about books and all of that stuff tonight, books mean a lot in 66. Without books, we would be in a fix. Martha LaPlante. LaPlante of Cayuga Heights Elementary School. That is so cool.
Amanda.
I have a couple good ones, too. But this one was from May 1966. The best book I have read is about space. When I grow up, I would like to be an astronaut because I would like to walk in space or command the spaceship. Teddy Smith.
Rich, you got one?
I do. It says Tony Severtson, Central Kindergarten, 1966.
All right.
Is there anything on the back?
Jason?
I have. Oops. Some people like lie berries. I do. Do you? Farming countries and berries too. Alice Carpenter, May 20th, 1966.
So Dan shared this one with me, and I have to read it because this is amazing. It says, my name is Danny Akers. I am 10 years old. I'm in the second grade at Cayuga Heights School. Guess what? Danny Akers is the head boxing coach at GIAC.
Taking this to him tomorrow.
Oh, that's so great.
I'm not sure Annette's going to let you take it, but you could take
this is archival material. Okay. You could just take a picture.
All right, Glenn, have you got one?
This is one. The world wouldn't be without books. All the books in the world are not worth all the money in the world. Barr Anderson.
Okay. Huh. All right. All the books Mike Lane, you got one?
Mine just said, I love books. And the number 6, and I think maybe a 6-year-old.
Sounds right.
Anybody else? Annie?
So this is from Dennis Oakesford, May 20th, 1966. And at that time, he wanted to note that they did not yet cure the common cold with a needle or pill or capsule. Bad news.
Haven't. I have a question for folks. Does anybody know, this one says, our class of 17 9-year-olds had a white elephant party. Ooh. And raised $10.29. Yes. West Hill School, Mrs. Lila Shepherd.
It's like a garage sale.
Is that what they meant by
it? Yeah. No, it's right? It's everybody brings a gift, and then I open one, and then if you're next, you can either take mine or open the next.
No, it's a sale.
Well, that's cool.
No, right? They had a white elephant sale.
That's a party, but a sale is different. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's like a
Christmas. But it's the same kind of stuff, we Danny. Do that.
Christmas party.
Yeah, it's the stuff that you got.
It's
at
the
that
stuff
thing.
That you don't want.
Right. Yeah.
Well, they raised $10.29.
Right. Deborah and then Dan. Deborah, you had your hand up?
No, well, I'm so anal. I rolled them all back up, and I rolled up Shauna's, too. But I had one that was really cute that said, I helped build the library.
I have one that says that, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Dan.
I didn't hear what it said.
It said, I helped build the library.
Dan.
So I was at that event. It put a big smile on my face. It was such a wonderful event. Jason was gracious enough to invite some of us up to help unpack the thing. And something that's really stuck with me, a bunch of the boxes and such in there were bound with string in this very kind of elaborate way. And it just struck me like that's something that people then knew how to do. They had to. And it was all, everything's taped very neatly. And it's just something that, you know, we don't we don't learn string anymore. For some reason, that one really stuck with me.
They don't teach cursive or string anymore.
No string. And all of the materials were well preserved. We did have some concern that they might not have been, and I think that extra packaging probably helped. The welding helped as well.
Dave, did you have one?
Sure. I like books because they tell about a lot of guns, animals, and some are funny. Glenn Rott.
All right. Henry, you have one? Your microphone.
I'm back in the capsule, like Deborah did. Jim Cruz, 9920 Clifford Street. I go to school at West Hill School. I am 10 years old. The year is May 20th, 1966.
All right. Mike Lane? Did you have a hand up, Mike?
I have a question. Okay,
yeah.
I want to stop.
Did everybody do one? Mine just said books. Eugene Campbell. A very succinct person. Maybe a poet, Amanda. Mike Lane?
I just wanted to ask, are we going to get to hear Morris Bishop's tape at some point? I understand he gave that lecture in this room.
Oh, really? I thought it was at the library. Anyway, the transcript was sent out. I don't know. Do you have a way to?
I've been told that we can.
We can. Okay.
So once we've taken it from this to a format we can use, we'll let you know. But if anyone's interested, I did send the transcript of the speech to a couple of folks. If anyone wants
it. I never remember
to hear the voice.
And I'd really like to hear his voice.
So I've been told that we can do that.
Terrific.
Well, thank you both for coming. This is great.
Thanks.
And the display will be up when? I mean,
It will be a collection, an archive. We'll probably do some kind of display, but it's going to take us a while to open these, and so don't hold your breath.
Did everybody put theirs back in?
Yeah, we do have to have them.
Amanda?
I have one more to end the conversation, which is perfect. From Verna Decker, 6th grade, Northeast School. Besides dogs, books are man's best friend.
All right. Thank you so much. Really
thank
appreciate
you.
Your coming and sharing all this with us. This is great. I guess we can also see how non-biodegradable plastic is, right?
That is true.
Especially when it's welded.
That's gelatin. Right.
Thank you so very much.
That's true.
All right. The long-waiting planning department, Katie Borghella and Darby Kiley. Welcome. You need the slides. Projector? Yeah, okay. All right, I invite folks to get a snack in the back there. If you have your pajamas, you might want to get them on, too. Be here for a while. We haven't even started. Right?
That was adorable.
Welcome, Katie Borghella, our Commissioner of Planning and Sustainability. And Darby's in the bleachers. Okay, Darby Kiley, Environmental Planner. Hello, Katie.
Hi. Thanks for having me. That's a tough act to follow. I don't have a whole lot of adorable things to read to you, but I got a lot of great accomplishments to share, so that's good. I wanted today to take the opportunity to both look at the past and look to the future, looking at our sustainability and energy work that the county, through its past and current legislature, staff, partners, and as Anna mentioned before, the tremendous volunteers and activists we have in this community have accomplished. And then we'll transition and look at the energy strategy that my department's asking you to take action on today. So it all began in 2000. I will say that I've got a couple cute quotes in there from high schoolers and middle schoolers from 2000, talking about we never really do anything, we got to do our part, and this would set a precedent. Just the role of young people in encouraging us to look forward and take action. This is a big investment of the legislature at the time, and it was one of the largest arrays on a public building. So that kind of kicked us off with our commitment to energy as Tompkins County. And in 2001, we joined ICLEI, back when ICLEI actually stood for something instead of a bunch of letters in a row. In 2001, there were 350 governments worldwide, and it's up to 1,750 now. Out of that ICLEI membership, the first greenhouse gas emissions inventory was completed. And then that rolled into the first goals that were set and the first climate action plan that was set. You see, in 2002, we set our first goal of 10-year emissions, 20% below our 1999 levels by 2008. We did not achieve that goal. Part of greenhouse gas emissions accounting that is interesting is it makes you take good stock of what you own and what you use and how your energy is consumed. Between those two emissions inventories, we recognize that we didn't just have 122 vehicles, but 220 vehicles, which makes it difficult to meet your greenhouse gas emissions goals. The first years, we really focused on facilities. They were a big user of energy. They still are, of the county operations. And we entered into an energy audit with the NYSERDA to FlexTech program and notably a long-term energy performance contracting effort with Johnson Controls. We also did a lot of work during this time period on green purchasing and waste reduction. And I will say, in your agenda packet, you had the full 10 pages that we put together. It's meant to be a work in progress. If people know of things that aren't kind of captured in that summary, please let us know, and we'll be updating it. In 2008, the county took kind of the first formal planning type of step by creating a chapter as part of the county comprehensive plan that was amending the county comprehensive plan. It set a principle around reducing energy use and transitioning to renewables, and it set the first policy of this 80% reduction from 2008 levels by 2050. Just thought as I was kind of going through this process of looking back, really it's important to highlight the role of fracking on the energy work that the county did. In the 2008 energy element of the comp plan, we talk about this fairly recent development of the Marcellus Shale formation for natural gas. And, you know, as many of you know, that turned into a battle that went on for years and years with this legislature playing a big role in leadership and a lot of the people here playing huge roles statewide. It, in my mind, kind of culminated in this People's Climate March down in New York City in 2014 that was also held in DeWitt Park. There were, if you remember, busloads of people from this area that went down for that march, and people came back all you know, feeling like there shouldn't be any more natural gas in the county and very committed to making change locally. And then, of course, that same year in December, Governor Cuomo banned fracking in New York State. So during that same time period, some of the highlights of items that the county worked on, our facilities group put solar panels on 7 county facilities, leasing them through Solar Liberty. Renewable energy credits purchasing, Jonathan played a big role in that work. The airport was awarded the Sustainable Master Plan Award for their work. Highway transitioned their diesel vehicles to B20 biodiesel. The green building project was, our policy was first adopted, and Department of State had the first LEED Silver certified building on the county's roster. and don't want to leave out ITS. They've done a ton of work on their data centers and servers, which use a lot of energy, and they've done a lot of work to consolidate those and make them less energy intensive. From 2015 to 2019, again, this is just a smattering of highlights to give you some examples. We entered into a remote net metering contract with Gravity Renewables for hydroelectric. In 2017, that was 80% of our electricity use. We were the fourth silver certified community in the state under the Climate Smart Communities Program. We launched our Business Energy Advisors Program. County had this reuse diversion program, and we really got even more serious about buying more electric vehicles and installing charging stations. We were a founding member of the Ithaca 2030 District, looking at energy use in the downtown commercial buildings. And then just have to nod, since it's my department, that the charter was changed to recognize the importance of sustainability and added that to the planning department's name, and also changed the solid waste division to be recycling and materials management. So some of the main planning documents, the first energy strategy was actually adopted in 2010. It was called the 2020 Energy Strategy, which in hindsight is a little confusing. But the goal of that was to find out, is it possible for the community to reduce its greenhouse gas emissions 20% by 2020, kind of that first step along the path to get to 80% reduction by 2050. And indeed, we found that we could do that. None of this stuff is easy. We always have a caveat of that. But it was possible, especially looking at what was being done in higher education. Cornell switched from coal to natural gas, which made a big difference, for example. We also completed, under the leadership of Tompkins County, the Cleaner Greener Southern Tier Regional Sustainability Plan for our region, where we laid out a bunch of action items that our region could take to reduce its greenhouse gas emissions and enhance climate activities. And in 2014, the county completed its sustainability strategy with the sustainability team that worked for many years, a cross-disciplinary team, and they were tasked with looking at sustainability practices in county government operations. In partnership with TCAD and TCIDA, we worked with Tatum Engineering to kind of help develop the criteria for tax abatements for green building design and construction for the IDA. And also with TCAD, we did a joint study on energy focus areas, asking two questions: can existing electrical and natural gas infrastructure support anticipated growth, and are all electric buildings a feasible alternative? And then in 2015, you adopted the comprehensive plan. And I'm not going to read all of this to you. This is a lot of information, I should warn you. So I'm kind of blowing through it. I just want you to know it exists, and we're happy to talk to you about any of these documents in more detail. But we have an overarching principle about sustainability. And then we have a whole chapter on energy and greenhouse gas emissions with the principle and supporting policies. We have a chapter on climate adaptation with a principle and the supporting policies there as well. And then we completed our energy roadmap in 2016, and that had two objectives, trying to find out if primarily using our local renewables and reducing demand, could we get to this 80% emissions reduction by 2050? And the answer is yes. But it's not easy. And also identify local actions that can be taken to achieve the goal. In the energy roadmap, we looked at the renewable supply that our local resources have the potential to create, with caveats on what is possible and somewhat reasonable. And we also looked at demand reduction and what that might look like. All of it's quantified out in numbers. And then we created these different energy scenarios and compared them against business as usual. And you can see the bottom line there is business as usual. We'd see a reduction of 31% in greenhouse gas emissions. And these other scenarios could all get us to the 80% by 2050. I can't do an energy roadmap slide without having Baby Tyler in there. Maybe you all remember Baby Tyler, but that's how we tried to tell the story and get out of the numbers a little bit. So you can see, and that's really the heart of the scenarios of what are happening. We're switching to heat pumps or biomass. We are switching to renewables. We're driving less, and we are switching over to electric or walking or biking or taking the bus, which results in this graphic that we use quite a bit of talking about just those basic concepts of how we move from where we are now to where we want to be for climate change. Also with TCAD, we, in 2016, wrapped up our Energy and Economic Development Task Force, looking at what can we do that would be positive or at least neutral for our economy and achieve our climate goals. A couple of the recommendations in there to highlight is the working with the Public Service Commission and NYSEG to reduce dependence on natural gas. You've heard a lot about that through the efforts of many on the legislature and others in the community. And the other one was reducing fossil fuel use in commercial and industrial buildings. And that's really the heart of our Business Energy Advisors program and the success of that program. We've conducted 4 greenhouse gas emissions inventories since we've started doing this. The first one used 1998 data, and the most recent one was 2014 data. The 2008, we really beefed up how we did our methodology and made that the baseline for reporting. So whenever we update the emissions inventory, you kind of have to update the 2008 data as well so you can compare apples to apples. So the most recent ones, we always do them for the community as well as for government operations. And for the community, we found that we had a 21% reduction from emissions from 2008. And for county operations, it was 53% reduction. But the sad fact is that the way that methane is accounted for under current scenarios or current science on accounting doesn't account for the fracked gas the way that many here locally think we should be doing it, looking at a shorter global warming time frame and taking into account some of the leakage that occurs. So if you look at it that way, we didn't go down 21%, but we increased 67%. So it's a pretty big difference in how you look at it. But the bottom line is all of our messages are that we need to transition away from fossil fuels and natural gas to electricity. So it's basically the same thing to do. Just some of the reasons for progress. Again, that switching when Cornell switched from coal to natural gas for their heating operations made a big difference in our emissions. We also track the growth of renewables, and that's really seen a huge increase, as you all know, especially with solar farms and solar in general. And then since those were done, we also did a study of small to medium scale wind and found that right now it really just doesn't make economic sense at this time, but that there are some wind resources, but and we should track it closely to see if there might be opportunities in the future. And we made a report up. There were a lot of municipalities working on solar and wind energy laws and did research and recommendations on some of the land use aspects of those types of systems. So now switching over to the energy strategy. This is where we look forward. So again, the goals here were to take the next step. The first energy strategy looked at the 20% by 2020. This was trying to look at 40% by 2030. What we were trying to do is the same kind of way we did it back in 2010, where we develop about 10 high impact actions and move forward with that. Darby Kiley spent a lot of time working on this from our staff, and we've been working with the Energy Task Force on this approach for about a year and a half plus. We held 7 topical focus groups. We had a lot of interviews. We basically tried to talk to anyone who was an expert or had an opinion on energy. So we talked a lot with a lot of people. We even hired a consultant to try to find a great list of new actions that we could take the lead on. And it was very difficult to do. In fact, we went through this whole process. We presented it to the Energy Task Force, and the results were disappointed. Action seems small. It's a laundry list. It was very disheartening, to tell you the truth, but they weren't wrong. So we basically took this feedback and we regrouped and said, this isn't working. We've been trying to do this update of the strategy for a while now. We need to think of it in a fresh way. And so kind of had a bit of a light bulb moment, realizing that given the IPCC's recent report and that just climate change is such a scary thing right now, that there's this need to be a bit bolder and more leadership-oriented on the topic, that this idea of taking steps along the path isn't really what is getting people excited about in terms of facing this challenge. And also just thought about, you know, what role can the county really play? The county is good at collecting data, analyzing data, presenting results, convening people, preparing reports, applying for funding, having stakeholders come together to identify issues. So why don't we try to really just build on our strengths? And that's what you'll see in front of you with the energy strategy, that it's a two-page document. It's got an internal focus and an external focus. The internal is looking at our own operations and how we can be leaders, as we have been, which you can see from 2000, but really looking at our facilities and fleet and trying to determine a financially sound path to net zero emissions. And then also looking at our employee commutes, which we really have never done before. We've got a big group of employees. They live, many of them, out of county or the far reaches of county. How can we support them in trying to reduce their greenhouse gas emissions from commuting? And do a greenhouse gas emissions inventory to keep us on track and keep people with good information to make decisions. And externally, we would do a community greenhouse gas emissions, again, on behalf of the community. We could continue to support targeted programs like our Business Energy Advisors Program. We could periodically host an energy summit where we could convene people, talk about where we're at in different energy areas and what everybody's doing, look for synergies and how we can support each other moving forward. Similarly, we could do a state of energy report where we identify opportunities, and maybe there are funding sources that are on the horizon that we could gather around. And looking at our stakeholder group meetings and preparing reports, pursuing funding, we still have the big list of actions that we came up with, and we could just targetedly go after those activities. And the examples given in the energy strategy were meant to be examples from this list and other ideas that people come up with. Anything from looking at publicly accessible EV charging stations solutions to helping municipalities adapt an idea like the Green Building Code to their own municipalities, to helping people understand things like community choice aggregation programs and other energy procurement. So that's it in a whirlwind. Thanks for your attention. Appreciate it.
Katie, thank you so very much. There's just so much there. And 10 pages, as you said, of listing the items is really impressive to look at the chronological development and sort of the intellectual library that's here. And I invite people to really poke around the website, the Planning and Sustainability Department's website. It's all up there. And, you know, you can totally get lost and just read one thing after another, and there's just a wealth of knowledge there. So I really appreciate that, and if we could take questions, comments, but maybe then also go directly to Deborah and the resolution. And I promise the people who are waiting for the co-location discussion, you know, I think we'll do that next. So thank you for waiting. Hi, Kathy. So questions, comments. Annie?
Just quickly, because I know we have a lot of stuff on our plate, I just wanted to thank you again for putting this together. There's great presentation and this the documents, and especially for all the work that you and your department have been doing. So thank you.
Shauna?
I think one thing that the community needs to realize as well is that solar right now is less expensive than it was 3 years ago. My family looked at it 3 years ago, and it was actually going to cost more to have solar panels than it would for me to pay directly NYSEG. 2 months ago, Renovas came out. We're doing being part of a solar farm right now, and it's actually going to cost $10 less to go through Renovas and be part of the community solar program than it is for us to pay our NYSEG bill every month. So I think if people are interested in going solar, right now is a really great time to do it. The prices have dropped quite a bit, and definitely get involved before the tariffs from China become too high.
I think it's an example of how this intellectual library, as I mentioned, really builds on itself, and things keep changing. And so when Cornell switched to natural gas, that was seen as a great achievement, and certainly it reduced particulates and certain kinds of pollution tremendously to move off of coal, but that was happening right at the moment when fracking was starting, and we were just realizing what the impacts were of methane and calculating in a different way. So things change, and you know, it's really important that our staff helps to keep us up on the latest information. Somebody else? Did I see any other hands? All right, Deborah, packet page 91 is the resolution.
Yeah, so thank you, Katie. I second Annie's awe at your good work on this. I'm really happy to see more of an internal focus. I think there's a lot we can do to lead by example. So at this time, I would like to move resolution number Y, adopting the Tompkins County Energy Strategy, ID 8761.
Seconded by Dave McKenna. I think that's a V.
Yeah, I think it's a V.
Oh, it's
yeah.
A V? Okay.
Yeah.
Well, whatever.
Okay. Discussion. Really? Cool.
Yeah.
All right. Are ready to vote? All in favor, please raise your hand. Any opposed? That's unanimous.
Thank you, Katie.
And I'm
thank you very much.
Delighted that the word adopting is in there. And this is something that we've talked about many times over the years. And this means that we are taking a hold of this, and this is our policy. This is what we intend to do as legislators and supporting the staff and your work. Thank you very much. Thank you, Darby.
Thank you.
And our appreciation to the whole staff.
Thank you, Katie.
All right, there's like tons of stuff we're not doing. And is anybody waiting literally just for the consent agenda? Because I would read that, but that would take 10 minutes tonight. So All right, so I'm going to ask us to go to public safety. Rich, you're the resolution on the joint facility, page 118.
Thank you, Martha. This is Resolution X, a resolution in support of evaluating the feasibility of establishing a joint city and county public safety facility. And I would so move.
Second by Anna Kellis.
And I would also move an alternate resolution. I don't know if that's been handed out. Kathy, did that circulate?
Michelle's getting that copy now.
Ah. Okay. I'll just speak to it. What you're going to be handed in a moment has a change on line 41. Instead of reading for all feasible sites that could accommodate a jail with the county and city, it should read for all feasible sites that could accommodate a jail in proximity. And on the next page, on line 3, plotting of facilities onto the recommended site, including adaptive reuse of the existing structure located thereon, should be amended to read plotting of facilities onto all feasible sites, including the adaptive reuse of existing structures located thereon. And I would move those amendments.
So I assume, is that friendly to?
It's friendly.
Okay, good. So that's what we got. Rich, you want to go ahead?
Yes, please. I know that this resolution has had a lot of discussion, and certainly we had members of the public coming and speaking to us on this issue. I would remind my colleagues here that this is a generational decision we would be making at this point if we vote not to go forward with a study. The resolution does authorize a study, but it does not set an amount. What it specifically is doing is asking city and county staff to meet and further define a scope of what would be studied, then come back to us for approval of that scope with estimates, cost estimates for what a study would cost. I heard some numbers thrown out on privilege of the floor that I had not heard before. We have heard a rough estimate that it could be $100,000, but we don't know until we have a full scope to look at. And I would remind each of my colleagues that we will have a choice at that time whether to go forward. So you are not making a final decision tonight on anything other than to direct, let's get a more well-defined scope. And that scope would also include looking at other sites besides the Commercial Avenue site that was identified. It does seem that there's strong feeling on the legislature that we should not be limited to that one site, and I agree. Let's look at the other ones. And the scope, as directed, would encompass looking at other sites. If we did go forward tonight and they did prepare the scope and we said do the study, we would then have further opportunity to say, is this a good idea to go forward on ultimately? And as I sit here, I don't know whether it is a good idea. I can tell you that if we think we know right now, we don't. This is a multivariable problem we have before us. I've heard a lot of talk, for instance, about where call volume is coming from. And that's a factor to look at. That's one factor among many. And to think that we would know as we sit here that we can determine what is the best course for the taxpayers in this case, I just don't think is true. And we should walk with some humility here to really determine, are we making the best decision in this instance? And that would take time and a study to make sure we are thinking through this important, important question properly for the taxpayers. And I say that this decision holds special relevance or concern or consequence because the city is looking at building a new facility. At the same time, we're evaluating the condition of both our road patrol and civil facility, but also our jail. These are large cost items, and once they're built, you can't move them easily without walking away from a tremendous investment. There are potential benefits to be gained. There's certainly costs. This is not an easy decision. There's hard things to look at here. But some of the benefits that we could see, we had speakers come and talk to us about. The Municipal Courts Task Force took 2 years looking at this issue. And we had two of their members here tonight talking to us about the importance of at least doing this study, at least thinking it through properly. If we could do central booking and central arraignment, we could achieve some significant efficiencies in our criminal justice system. And if we don't, we walk away from those possibilities without further consideration. I think that's wrong. I would also add that the task force looked at the financial costs, and they saw significant annual savings in transportation costs and assigned counsel costs. I would suggest that would go forward to save money for our district attorney, for our courts, and also for probation and all of the alternatives to incarceration programs we have developed. We are a New York State leader in our alternatives to incarceration, and the idea is that we work in cooperation, we bring the resources together, and we do the best job we can in evaluating people accused of crimes and figuring out whether they need to be in our jail or in some other program in one of our treatment courts. And the best way to do that in an efficient manner is to have a central location to get that done. Again, I believe it's worth looking at. We will lose that opportunity if we don't at least let them do the scope and let us determine, is this a study we want to do? I'll stop talking for now on this, but I'd like to come back. Thank you.
Thank you, Rich. Anyone else? Dan.
When this topic first came up, I think it was about 3 years ago, I just never thought this was a good idea to put the county and the city together for this police. You know, we originally looked at the whole spectrum, including merging the departments. None of it seemed like a good idea to me, but the idea was, hey, we're going to look at this, we're going to do a little study and just see if it makes sense. And so one study's been done, and this is a proposal to maybe continue doing some studying. I hear a lot of legislators and some members of the public say this doesn't seem like a good idea, and I'm still not convinced either. However, I don't understand walking away from a study. It's a legitimate question, and a study is just that. It's a study. It's not a decision. It is not a solution, solution in search of a problem. If you go to the jail, you will see a structure that's in trouble. It's decaying. That needs some help. It was built. It was the last jail built on the old style in the entire New York State, maybe the entire country. I'm not sure. So it's really a moment when we need to be thinking about what our jail should look like and be like. If you walk into the sheriff's department offices, I know not everyone has had the opportunity to do that, but I think the legislators all have, you can see that it's not really a great structure. There's a lot of issues there, and we have increased our staffing numbers, but we haven't increased our building size. If you've had the opportunity to go into the Ithaca Police Department, it's like a really inadequate structure. It really is. So here we are at this moment when both the county and the city are asking legitimately, what should we do with our public safety infrastructure? And because we happen to be doing this at the same moment, that's why this study is legitimate. If this study was saying, hey, we just built a new facility 5 years ago, but maybe we should build a second one, that maybe would not be legitimate. But the fact that we're both considering this at the same time really, I think, obligates us to ask the question, should we go a little further with this? The last thing I want to say, several people from the public, and as I've had discussions, other people have pointed out this idea that it's better to be in Lansing than downtown because the call volume is higher in that corner of the county. And I have to say that when I have talked to some people in Danby about this, they have a reaction that maybe you can predict, which is, let me get this straight, it needs to be in Lansing. You're like, that's further away from us. So I don't think the geography should automatically dictate where this facility might be. It's one of many factors. And then finally, just the idea that it would be further away from Lansing and Dryden doesn't automatically mean that it's going to take longer to get to Lansing and Dryden. The county keeps three cars in on patrol most of the time. That's kind of the standard operation. And so it's not automatically true that it's going to take longer to get somewhere based on where the actual facility is. Thank you.
Thank you, Dan. Next, anybody? Mike Lane.
I've been an advocate of consolidation of police agencies for a long time. We did studies of that even before the more recent studies funded by the state. I don't agree that it's a bad idea to consolidate police agencies, but I don't ever see it happening as far as the county and the city police, as long as the city police have an appointed police chief and the county road patrol has an elective sheriff. A couple of years ago, we tried when we were doing the new charter update, the revisions of the charter, to have a public hearing on the issue of whether the sheriff should be either an appointed sheriff or relegated to solely to administering the jail and the civil part, and then we have a county police department and appoint a police chief for that. This legislature decided by a narrow vote not to even have a public hearing on that issue. Several years before that, we decided not to expand our jail and to rely solely on our alternatives to incarceration, although some of us thought we should do both. We've been very lucky with the way the numbers in the jail have gone down through our efforts, but also through what's happening probably statewide. Other people are seeing reductions in their numbers of prisoners as well. It would be nice to say, well, we could co-locate, and I probably would be still interested in co-locating the administration of the city and the sheriff's department. But when this large gorilla was dumped into that we had to be able to build a new jail, or be able to have space to build a new jail and move it from where it is, that's when I started saying, whoa, in my mind. Our jail is, and Dan, you're right, it wasn't built the way more modern jails are with pods, but we do have the ability to add a pod on it. We've talked about that with commission corrections, and it would be a lot less expensive than building a new jail. And if you don't believe that, take a look at what's going on in Cortland right now, and they're pushing to build a new $50 million jail. So is it wrong to study something? No, we do study things. We study them all the time. But do I see a valid outcome here without dragging us into expense that I don't think is necessary? No. And so that's the reason I'm supporting it. I'm not supporting it, not because I'm against studying things, but because I don't think this is taking us down the right trail.
Shauna?
So $20,000 has already been spent doing a study, and we have absolutely no answers. To think that we would spend $100,000, and while I understand some legislators say it's not a lot of money in the grand scheme of things, we're going to be spending $50 million, that's a lot of money. It's $100,000. I think we can't ignore the fact that 65% of the calls that come in are from the northeast part of our county. We have the new detox that's not even open yet, and I can guarantee you there's going to be quite a few calls that are going to be coming from that detox. There's BOCES, which, as we learned last year in public safety and around budget time, they receive quite a few calls on a daily basis. And we also have shelter beds that are being used in the Village of Lansing, which are receiving quite a bit of calls from the sheriff as well as the state police. So with that in mind, we have to keep that location. It just makes sense. I think the idea, whenever I spoke with the sheriff a few days ago, to try and get an idea of how often, what is the percentage of time that officers are in the field, typically what happens is when there's an incident, they call for backup. 40% of the time, they receive backup from the main headquarters at Warren Road. And so it does not make sense to have that person coming from another part of the area, especially whenever we're talking about 65% of the calls. So I will be voting against this resolution.
Liz, is that your hand up? Deborah, then Anna.
So our legislature's been considering this proposal for several months, and over time my aversion to it has simply grown. It was first presented by one of my colleagues as a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity, the idea being that taking advantage of the coincident need for a new IPD headquarters and an upgraded or new county public safety facility would position a future legislature to consolidate the two departments if they so chose. More recently, I've been assured by several of my colleagues that consolidation is simply not on the table. I'm not sure I care whether we're trying to arrange a shotgun marriage here or just moving the kids in together because the rent's cheaper that way. I think housing these two very, very different departments together is not a good idea. The IPD and the Tompkins County Sheriff's Department have very different cultures, different unions, a different pay and benefit scale, different policies on overtime. Co-location will merely force personnel in both of these departments to confront these differences in culture, management approaches, pay and benefits every working hour, rather than occasionally when they're brought together now to work on a specific case. It will heighten our deputies' sense of dissatisfaction with their pay and benefits scale, which is significantly lower in the long term than IPD's. It will breed dissension and dissatisfaction in ways that will take a toll on the quality of law enforcement provided by our sheriff's office. This is just common sense. Based on 30 years of experience with law enforcement and regulatory enforcement agencies and an acute awareness of human nature. One of my colleagues has suggested that his experience with corporate mergers and acquisitions disputes this, that the powers that be just have to make the employees knuckle under and get along. I would suggest that corporate employees function very differently from public law enforcement personnel. Our deputies are providing a public service, putting their lives in danger on a daily basis, getting paid less than they probably should, and carrying guns. Ditto the IPD. To get optimal performance from people in these circumstances, it's a good idea to make their work conditions as positive as you possibly can. We shouldn't be cramming an unwelcome work situation down their throats. Moreover, it is not as if there's going to be some common corporate overseer who's going to enforce a new common culture. Instead, we have two managers, an elected sheriff, and an appointed police chief, two different unions, three if you count the corrections officers, two governments who are ultimately responsible for their law enforcement agencies' functions. What could go wrong? I also object to moving TCSO down to the city of Ithaca. Its current location in the Village of Lansing just makes sense for a number of reasons, which Shauna trampled all over already, but I'll repeat them. Over the past decade and more, an average of 65% of the calls every year for Tompkins County Sheriff's Office services come from the northeast sector of our county. The towns of Lansing, Groton, Dryden, and the east-northeast portion of the town of Ithaca. outside the city of Ithaca, this part of the county is growing the most, particularly the towns of Lansing and Dryden. These areas combined comprise approximately 45% of the area of the county and pay at least 40% of county taxes. The commercial area that has grown up at the intersection of Route 13 and North Trip Hammer Road accounts for a substantial percentage of the county's sales tax revenues. Meanwhile, the shops at Ithaca Mall account for a substantial number of the calls to the Tompkins County Sheriff's Office, as they are the site of numerous and consistent blundering attempts at shoplifting. The recent practice of housing the city and county's homeless at the Econo Lodge in the village of Lansing has resulted in a sharp uptick of calls to the TCSO, a trend that's likely to continue unabated, if not worsen. In connection with this proposal, I'd also like to point out that the village of Lansing has agreed to host the Alcohol and Drug Council's Open Treatment Center to all of our benefit, in part because village leaders were assured that any law enforcement problems that might ensue from that facility would be the subject of rapid response from a sheriff's office that was only 2 minutes away. And finally, I'd remind my colleagues that less than a year ago, the Tompkins County Sheriff's Office came to us with an OTR for a deputy position that they wanted to share with TST BOCES because they had so many calls from TST BOCES on Warren Road, down the street from the current facility. For all of these reasons and more, but I won't bore you with them, it makes no sense to me to move the TCSO away from the land the county owns already in an area of the county that most needs the deputy's services. I don't see how such a move would ultimately serve county taxpayers or the residents of my district. Since I oppose both co-location and the relocation of the TCSO, I decline to authorize the use of county staff time and resources to try to craft an RFP to study the co-location option. Thank you.
Thanks, Deborah. Anna?
I don't know if anything that I am going to say at this point will make any difference. I feel and recognize that and respect that many of us have been cogitating on this issue for a very long time, and I feel very strong opinions. But despite that, I'll share a few things that are sticking out to me. One is that I don't see any planners, architects, or engineers in this group. And I want us and I implore us to be very careful to make statements, even if they're internal, that we don't think, for example, a new jail is needed, or we do think a new jail is needed, or we know that it is one way or the other, or one way or another about where the best location is for all members of the community. The point is, we don't know. And I don't care how long any one of us studies this in our own free time, none of us around this table are experts in those areas to which we would put an RFP forward to ask for that information. So I just want to make that one point really clear, that it would be good for us to remember. What I have noticed is that those who are opposed to even gathering information are those legislators that represent districts that are the most closely geographically located to the current location. I recognize that. I respect that. Probably won't change your mind. But we as a body have to make a decision that is best for the collective. And I am not sure we have that information yet. So for anyone in the group that hasn't made up their mind, I would implore you to consider the fact that maybe we don't have that piece of information. I wanted to add to what Dan said about officers, and I appreciate, Shauna, the information you brought forward about the 40% follow-up calls. It is true that the first responders, the first people who are there, are most likely not at the home base when those calls are made. And I think that it is really important when we are talking in the community about the amount of time that it would take to respond. That is when they are making that call. That is not necessarily the second call or the third batch of people going. That is specifically the first arrival of people, and that is extremely important. And when you do de-escalation, it's the first group of people that are there, and a majority of the time that is what's important. And the fact that those people will not be coming from a home base to me is really important. So using the argument that location is really important to me is secondary, and I don't think that that should be what we make our decision on. One of the things, Deborah, that you brought up, and I appreciate it, is that Lansing is a growing economy, which it absolutely is. The areas of Dryden and Lansing do represent a very large portion of the economy in Tompkins County, about 34%. But the call volume is 65% coming from those areas. And it does not escape me that those areas, or the reason that there is that many calls, is because those areas also have not invested in having a local police force. That is a fine decision, an absolutely legitimate decision. It is one of the central, we have two commercial districts. That is one of them. The other commercial district in our county invests heavily in their own police force, and that is the City of Ithaca. So City of Ithaca representative or City of Ithaca residents pay double. They pay for the IPD and they pay for the sheriffs. So I question that as an argument that there's a majority of calls coming from that area, and not acknowledging that it is the case because it is a commercial center that is not supported by a local law enforcement, and the only local law enforcement is the county. So again, when we're asking for the entire county, what is the best case scenario? I think that we have to do a study to answer that question. The last thing that I will say is that we don't know if we need a new jail. We don't. We don't have that information. We are gathering the information of how much it would cost to renovate. We do know, though, for a fact, that the current model of the jail, even if it were renovated as is not best practice at this point. We know that. Even if it were renovated, we could add pieces to it, but it would be a piecemeal effort. So if it is the case that the renovation would cost just as much as a new jail, we have to responsibly consider building a new jail. I would never support adding new beds, and I would be very, very clear about that. But I think that we would be irresponsible not to consider that. If it is the case that we are going to build a new jail, and we know we need new road patrol and administration components, and we know the city is building it at the same time, it behooves us to evaluate whether or not at least the shared location of the administration and road patrol would save significant amounts of money for our taxpayers. If it would save millions of dollars, it would be irresponsible for us not to recognize that. And the last piece of that, to use the difference in cultures as the reason that we do not even look at buildings that will be around for decades and decades and decades after everyone on the current IPD and sheriff are dead, to me is just not a valid reason. We can look at pay. We can look at benefits. We've got decades to look at that and to evaluate how we can help them coordinate. I just don't think that's a rationale to not even do a study. So I am in support of doing at least an evaluation of what a proposal would cost. This isn't even approving the study. This is just to find out how much a study would cost.
Rich, Deborah, and then I'll take a turn, and I'd like to ask Jason to make a couple comments.
I would echo what Anna just said about using geographical arguments that it's a dangerous, slippery slope if we go down that the northeast of our county has special police needs that take priority over the rest of the county. Certainly, if you compare them to the city, which is paying for the sheriff and does not get sheriff patrol, this is a divisive approach, and it won't lead to a good place, and I don't think we should be thinking about this issue in that way. I wanted to add one other thing on to elaborate on central booking, that central booking would have a real impact on getting officers back on the road for patrol, in that without a central booking facility, the officers wait for a judge to come in to do an arraignment. With a central booking and central arraignment facility, you can get those officers back on the road much faster. I was talking to a city police officer who said central booking would be huge. That would make our jobs so much more effective in terms of being able to be out doing actual police work. I mention this because I anticipate that we're going to be looking at requests for more patrol officers. That's quite a possibility in the upcoming budget cycle. And if we're going to be considering that issue, and we just stepped over the potential savings that we might be able to get if we did this study and we could determine it, that's a hard thing to explain to the taxpayers, and I think we will need to. It's short-sighted. We should do this study. We should get the scope, we should figure it out, and we should think about this in a careful manner.
Rich, before we go off of you, you had said that you talked to the Broome County District Attorney and
the sheriff.
The sheriff. And they actually had a figure that they, for the cost savings was related to consolidated arrangement. Do you have that?
I don't have the dollar figure. He very clearly said that it is a remarkably more efficient system in Broome County, that they are able to do an 8 o'clock arraignment in the morning and the evening, and they are able to tell the judges who's there that they're holding, it allows the district attorney, and they have, I believe, a public defender system to be far more efficient. Their probation officers are there, and it is just a far more functional system than having all of the courts spread out all over the county.
Okay, I've got Deborah, myself, Jason, Leslin, Mike, Lane, and Henry. If I missed anybody, Charles, apologies. So let me know. Deborah.
Well, we can have centralized booking and arraignment on Warren Road as easily as we can have it in the city of Ithaca. We need a holding facility and a room in which to have these arraignment hearings. That's what we need. I have talked to the magistrates, and as everyone full well knows, after that study that came out that suggested that we needed a consolidated booking and arraignment process, the hitch was we couldn't get the magistrates to agree. Now, maybe at some point in the future, they will agree. But right now, they're still not willing to go there. And if you talk to the magistrates and ask them what the problem is, part of it is that the smaller towns in the southern part of the county, A, don't pay their magistrates as much as Dryden and Lansing do, and B, don't generate as many arrests as Lansing and Dryden do. And so those magistrates do not feel that they should have to participate in any kind of booking and arraignment process on the same level and basis that Dryden and Lansing magistrates have to do. That's going to continue to be a problem, even if you plunk your centralized facility downtown somewhere. Until you can resolve that issue, it's going to be very difficult to have centralized booking and arraignment. And as long as you need a rotation that puts more of the burden on Lansing and Dryden magistrates, then it's better to have the centralized arraignment facility in Lansing. And I'm sorry, but I do not agree that it's necessarily divisive of me to be concerned about the residents in my village, in my district. We didn't ask to have the second largest commercial area in the county plunked down in our village. Our village didn't even exist at the time. We didn't ask to have our village cut in two by Route 13. We didn't ask to have our village divided by the mall. Unlike villages that are smaller and more compact and have their own police departments, our neighborhoods are spread all around the edge of that commercial district. It makes policing by a village police department ineffective. And I hardly think that we should be suggesting that any area that wants efficient policing should start its own village or town police department when we're under pressure to consolidate services and reduce the number of public services that are offered. That's all.
All right, I'll go. I'll add Rich to the end of this list. I'm puzzled, Deborah, if it's not efficient for a village police service to police the village, how is it more efficient or somehow better to have the sheriff, which has to share a whole zone, so which includes that zone goes all the way north to the county line and east to the county line. So that doesn't make sense. Anyway, I will go back to Dan. I think he said it the most simply and clearly. This is just about a study. I guess it almost feels like if you don't want to do the study, you're afraid that the study might prove your preconception is wrong. It's like if we don't know. There are a million things we don't know here. We don't know. There are lots of sites that we're not considered. I don't like the commercial app site. If that were the only site, I'd vote against it tonight. But it's not. Because our sheriff kind of opened up this question of having, you know, maybe he'd prefer to have the sheriff's department nearby the existing jail. So, oh, really, that was okay? Oh, then maybe we better go back and look at the city of Ithaca, because there are some sites that we eliminated before you said that. So we don't know about a bunch of sites that are available, and I would tick some of them off, but this is public, and that's a real estate issue. We don't know how many people can't get to see their loved ones at the jail because it's so hard to get there in Lansing. We love TCAT, but it doesn't really get there. A lot of those days doesn't get there, those times a day. OAR runs a best they can manage a volunteer service to drive people up to the jail. That would be entirely unnecessary. That's one advantage we haven't even looked at if the jail happened to be in the flats. By the way, the city, I have to argue, the city must be the fastest growing municipality in the county. Just take a walk two blocks down. So if we're worried about where the population center is, I mean, we're really lucky that the population and commercial center is in the geographic center of the county. I think that makes it relatively clean. So I would just ask that people not prejudge the results of a study. I would just ask you, let this move forward so we can consider our options. Let's just look at, I mean, and as Dan said, this is not even to move the study forward. This is to ask the staff that's already been working for a year or so on this, to ask the staff to come back with a refined scope of work, and then we can accept it or reject it. But if we just say no tonight, we've just said, I don't want to know. Don't tell me I don't want to know. And that doesn't feel like us. That doesn't feel like what we do. Jason, would you... You didn't raise your hand. I don't want to...
Play us off.
Let me jump in the deep end.
I think the staff needs to understand, the legislators need to understand from the staff's point of view, why has the staff been working on this for a long time, and what's behind this for you?
Well, you have a difficult decision because you have a facility that needs improvements, and that's what's, you know, if it was a brand new facility, you might not be talking about this issue. So you have a facility that needs improvements, and the truth is there's also an opportunity that the city at the same time is going through the similar process. So by the nature of that, which I don't think anybody here caused, you have some level of opportunity to look at them collectively. And I think that's what triggered the initial discussion, at least since I've been here, to say, all right, is there an opportunity here? I am not going to comment on anybody's perspective as whether you're right or wrong, because you're all right. Let me tell you right now, you're all right. You pay us to give you a recommendation based on the information we have available to you. I cannot give you a recommendation as to whether or not a co-location is an option because I don't have any information on it. I can't give you anything on that one. If we were to complete the condition assessment of the existing building, I can tell you what a renovation would look like compared to a new build. I can give you a recommendation of that. I can't give you anything on this, and that considered a cop-out, whatever it may be, is I don't have any information on it to give you that recommendation. It's a very emotional issue. I unfortunately have been on this. I've been on two sides of this topic and two different employers. My prior employer, I was on the city side of this discussion. I'm on the county side of the discussion. And believe it or not, the challenge you're having is the same the two other elected bodies had debating the issue over a 10 to a 15 year period as to what to do. There were opportunities lost in that, and there were opportunities gained with the decisions that were made. But unfortunately, right now, I just can't give you a recommendation because I don't have enough information to give you on it. I'm sorry.
Thank you.
But you're all right. I want you to know that.
Nice, Doc.
Well said. Well said.
Well, I think that's why this is hard.
It's not an easy decision. I'm going to be honest with you.
If this were easy, it would be easy. But so, Leslin, then Mike Lane, then Henry, then Rich.
Oh, Jason. You're right. There's no information, and that's why we're saying let's study the thing to get the information so that we can make the informed decision about whether co-location works for us or not. I'm not understanding what is the difficulty with that. I am not hearing there's a recommendation that, yes, we're a co-location. We don't have the information. Now, I raise my hand because I want to caution that we are not sitting here talking about how these cultures are just going to go at each other. Law enforcement folks get along really well. And if you think co-location is going to be what's going to cause them to be talking about who makes more money than whom, it's not. They do that now. So if they're together, whether they're apart, they do that now. But they also support each other really well. So I just want to caution around that portion of it about us sitting here and assuming what the culture is in each of those organizations and how they may or may not get along. That's it. Then I want to ask a question. I was searching around in my drawer because I thought I had it here. I must have taken it home. When we had the public coming out here in droves around what we're doing with the jail and all of these things, we commissioned a wonderful group of folks to get together and work with the public to talk about what are options that we can put in place that we're not locking people up or we're not trying to build
CGR
a new big jail. Although there was some misinformation there as well. I thought out of this in some of the shared services public input sessions, two, maybe three or four of them that we had, the public had input in this, and we said to the public, we want you involved in helping us with those recommendations about where we should go. Am I wrong?
No.
This is one of the things that came out of that study in which we, the public, entrusted us
that what they are bringing to us when we say we want you to be a part of this, don't come here and cuss and yell at us. Allow us to do the things you're asking us to do, and let's see if we can go anywhere with some of them. Some of it we did. They were easy. Well, they weren't so easy. Third judge was one of them. It's one of the things that came out of that. County judge. This is the other part of it. Are we now saying to the public, screw you? We valued your input. Mike, I see you nodding your head. Is that what we're saying? We valued your input when you were coming here in droves and yelling at us.
You aren't seeing me nodding my head, Leslie.
Your brow, rather. when you were coming here and yelling at us, we're like, oh, all right, let's get it together. We want your input. Tell us what will make this better. And now here's one of the things that came out of that. And so minds aren't probably going to change, but I just want to put that out there. It's like the very public we're saying that we represent, many of them were here. Many of them were at those shared services meetings, law enforcement services meetings. This is one of the key things that came out of that, and it's just a study. To then say, okay, we looked at it. We got all the information, and this sucker is not going to work. Co-location is not going to work. But I feel like we're already making this decision without having all of the information. So I just want to put that out there. Like I said, I'm sure votes aren't going to change because people have already made up their minds. But I feel real funny when we invite the public for input, and then we just sort of toss it aside after 2 years of really hard work by them.
Thank you, Leslie. Mike Lane.
Leslie, I think you're talking about two different studies.
I'm not sure which study.
The CGR study was the one that we went out and we had the folks come, and we heard a lot of folks say, don't combine these police agencies. You know, we don't want in the city the sheriff's department because they don't understand the city. We heard that more than once. And we heard people out in the country say, well, we don't want to combine with the city. But the other study is the one that you heard Scott Miller and Ray Slaughter talk about. That was the court study and the one that came up with the issue of consolidated arraignment. And that's what I wanted to say. That was why I asked to be called on, was simply to say, we can have consolidated arraignment in multiple locations. It doesn't have to be either or, a new facility downtown or the jail at the public safety building now. We can still look at that. This doesn't foreclose us being able to do that in the future.
I'll let Leslie go back with
it. Can I just follow up real quickly? But the CGR study and the public input in that also, aside from saying not consolidating police and sheriff, they also talked about that, yes.
They absolutely did.
They absolutely talked about it.
Talked about what? Finish the sentence.
About co-location.
Oh, okay.
They absolutely talked about what would it look like. So, no, that was not outside of what people talked about. They didn't want to have, you know, police and sheriff services consolidated. They were very clear on that. But it wasn't against doing this other thing to see what that would look like, especially if they felt that people would be, it would be much more efficient. Then you have this other study that came out. There was a lot of conversation around that.
All right, thank you both. Henry, Rich, then Anna.
Okay. Well, Leslie, I remember another study, the jail study, in which people definitely said they did not want us to build a new jail, they did not want us to renovate the jail, they don't want us to touch the jail, they want us to close down the jail.
Yes, I remember that.
Right. And so, in fact, building a new jail or renovating a jail is going to be controversial no matter what.
Right.
And so if we listen to the public that side, then we wouldn't be doing anything. If we listen to the people who came to the jail study. Also, well, also I went to the report that that's been quoted, and I have a quote. Ideally, this park would be situated publicly accessible in neutral facility that either is annexed to or is nearby Tompkins County Public Safety Building. And that refers to the central booking. This came out in July 2016. Why haven't we done this? Why hasn't anything been done with the central arraignment, central booking, which clearly it says ideally it would be near the public safety building?
Right.
Okay. Well, I'm just raising the issue that this came out 3 years ago, and it said that it could be next to the public safety building, but nothing's been done on this.
Well. Yeah. Ray was chair of the task force. Ray, did you hear the question? Would you be willing to?
Sure.
Fill us in.
You know, getting old is fading, but so there's been a lot of truth in different points that have been made here this evening. To get a centralized booking facility either requires the cooperation of the various local courts or requires state legislation. And in order to allow for cross-jurisdictional, in other words, the rules under the criminal procedure law require that a person be arraigned in the jurisdiction in which that person is arrested, and if a judge is not available, then taken to a nearby jurisdiction. And there's a whole bunch of procedural rules that control that. So the recommendation was, we want a centralized arraignment facility. We want it adjacent to wherever people are being taken. So the public facility would be the right place. Where that is located is a different issue. That's where everybody's talking about co-location, downtown, co-located, wherever. That's a policy decision you guys are going to have to wrestle with. We were not wedded to Lansing as opposed to Trumansburg, as opposed to Danby, or as opposed to the city of Ithaca. It didn't matter. It just should be at a place that is centralized, in other words, that is common to and located next to where the jail facilities would be or the holding facilities would be. But the bigger issue about why something hasn't happened in the past 3 years is a function of state legislation and the need to work on that. I would remind you that the wheels of justice move slowly. The wheels of the state legislature move even more slowly. And unfortunately, which only brings me back to the point I made earlier, it was incredible that we got the third county judge. We got it because of some magic, is all I can attribute that to. But we got it because there was some incredible political will that was engaged to get to that point. We will need to do the same kind of thing here in terms of getting the centralized arraignment facility, though there is some support in the Office of Court Administration for kind of pushing that kind of thing through. But it hasn't gone through yet, and that's why it hasn't happened. Have I answered the question?
So in other words, the report was saying at that time nobody was contemplating building a new jail or moving the public facility. It's just that it should be accessible and close to wherever the public facility.
Wherever the public safety building is going to be, wherever it is. That was the idea. Okay. So.
Right. So there's nothing that stopped us from doing it 3 years ago.
Except, we could get consent
of all the judges, too.
No. You need this. You need either the cooperation of the judges, in other words, voluntarily, but there's still a jurisdictional problem. The jurisdictional problem is, under the criminal procedure law, you cannot arraign, in other words, you have to arraign the person in the jurisdiction in which they are arrested, or if a judge is not available, then you can go to the adjacent jurisdiction or the nearest jurisdiction. And so that takes state legislation. That state legislation hasn't been enacted yet.
And has anybody been working on that state legislation?
Well, we've been kind of busy, Henry.
Okay. Well, also, I want to point out that, you know, in terms of the location of the calls, I remember Sheriff Osborne saying that Lansing was underserved. Yes, he said that on numerous occasions that Lansing is underserved by his police force. And so I put it by moving the jail to someplace else. It's just going to put more strain on that. He didn't talk about other locations. He definitely talked about Lansing being underserved. I also, thirdly, want to talk about the fact that people want to expand the search or whatever, or look for other properties. I mean, this joint committee could look at any property in Ithaca it wanted to. And I assume that it chose the best five properties that it wanted to. I assume, well, why would they hamstring themselves?
The criteria has changed.
What?
The criteria has changed.
No, because they also looked at a property that had, including for the jail. And so they could look at other properties that also included the jail.
Initially, the conversation was that the jail, or the assumption or the communication was that the jail needed to be attached, needed to be right next to it, needed to be on the same parcel. So this is now, and part of my argument about this is that I feel like we haven't had a full review by the consultant about what they already did on the site search. I don't feel we had a chance to ask Kingsbury any questions.
No, we did have a chance to ask Kingsbury.
No, it was with in full public with the city committee together. It wasn't the legislature and executive session. Real estate is touchy stuff. If we had an executive session where we could have really examined all the possibilities, we did not. We literally did not look at, you know, this parcel here and this parcel across the street could qualify. She eliminated those because she was told to look for a parcel that would hold everything. Then when Derek starts talking about he'd put the sheriff's office adjacent or over at you know, the crash fire rescue building or wherever, then suddenly that changes the criteria.
How do you know she didn't look at those?
It was in the report.
No, it wasn't.
She said that. It was said.
It's not at all clear, Martha, that that's what it says. What she says is it did not provide potential for expansion. The site does not have a good expansion potential.
For the jail.
It does not provide expansion area for the future county jail.
For the jail.
There is no expansion potential for a future county jail on the property or adjacent property.
Okay. I feel like we didn't have a chance to ask her questions. We didn't have a full look at all the sites. We didn't have any discussion with her about that. And that's why I've made that statement that I feel we need to have a renewed site search. So, I had that conversation before. I thought you understood why I was saying that.
I understood why you're saying it, but again, I still don't understand why we have to then expand the search willy-nilly to then, why can we not send it back to the joint committee? We can vote it down today, and I assume the joint committee can look at it again.
Actually, no. I mean, I think if we vote it down today, it's dead.
Why is it dead?
Well, if we can vote to send it back to committee, that's a different action. That's not no.
Public safety.
That's a different action. We could send it back to public safety. We could ask that it go back to the joint committee.
Call the question.
But
that's a different discussion. So if that's what you would like to do, is that a motion, Henry?
No, that's not.
There are some people who have their hands raised.
But
I have a lot of people on the list, Shauna. I appreciate that it's really late, and maybe we're being repetitive, but I just saw Dave's hand. He hasn't said a word yet. So I've got Rich, Anna, Leslin, and Dave.
My hand is off the list.
Leslin, you said you're off?
I'm off the list.
Okay. Rich?
I just wanted to offer some more information. I believe Broome County has special legislation that allows them to arraign in a common location. I'd also mention that in talking to the sheriff down there, that he says they carry an average of 500 people in their jail. I'm very glad that our numbers are nowhere near that. But having that kind of volume means that they have a lot more people coming through their arraignment process we are much smaller. And while we've had some discussion about the call volume in the Northeast, just to be clear, there's a larger police department in the city. It's about half again as large. And there's far more police activity coming out of the city. If you want efficiency, you have to capture that. If we do a central booking or central arraignment facility in Lansing, it would not be used by the city. You wouldn't get that efficiency. You also wouldn't share the cost of central booking with the city.
Well, I just wanted to add one thing. I really appreciate what you said. That was helpful when you talk about central arraignment or the nearest jurisdiction. The only jurisdiction that is, quote, the nearest jurisdiction is the central jurisdiction, which should be the city. Is that not correct? It's the only one that's contiguous to all the other jurisdictions.
Right. The city is contiguous, but the city...
not with Groton or Allard or Dryden.
The town of Ithaca.
I shouldn't say that. Yes.
You'd need New York State
legislation. It's not contiguous with anything but the town.
Yeah.
Right.
She's right. I always forget the donut of
the
town.
Yeah, the donut effect. Right.
The other thing that I wanted to add that I really appreciated, Leslyn, what you were talking about, because some of us, but not all of us, sat in the library meetings, the public meetings, and there were two things that I didn't know that were very helpful to me at the time. One of them was all of the people who cannot physically get to the jail location where it is and cannot visit their families. And that was one of the reasons that co-location was talked about or having it be sent to be it in the city. So I just want to acknowledge that that was something that the public said. For better or worse, for right or wrong, that was several years ago that did happen. And one of the people that impressed upon that upon me the most was Peter Stein. And that was something that he talked about a lot when he was here and how the jail is not accessible. And he spent a significant amount of his volunteer time driving people to the jail. So for those who weren't here at the time, it was, in fact, talked about that people were interested in co-location in those public meetings that not all the legislators went to, but Leslyn, you were there, and I was there in the library. So thank you for bringing that up.
Dave McCown.
Okay, I'd just like to point out something. The response time to any point in the county has absolutely nothing to do with the location of the sheriff's department. It has to do with the number of sheriff's deputies on the road and their location. That's what's going to make the biggest difference. We really need more deputies on the road. Okay? That's three is totally undermanned in this county, in my opinion. I've had three of them in my house for a situation a couple of times, and that ties up every agent that's on the road. So who's helping everybody else? Okay? The other is, do we or do we not still have a holding cell in the courthouse? I don't know if we do or we don't. Ray, do you know?
No, there's no holding in the county courthouse yet. No holding cell.
There's none in there.
No.
Okay, there used to be, right?
Well, you know, back in the day, the jail was right next to the courthouse, so it was kind of like a holding cell.
They have a holding
it's your new
cell
legislative chamber. It's your annex now.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Or
there, yes, right there. In fact, I used to visit people there from time to time.
Well, my point is that, you know, we could, if we're going to vacate part of that building and open some of that space up, we could put a holding cell there and have the arraignment in that building. In the city, equidistant from every place in the county, pretty much, and probably attain the same efficiencies as building a new jail and everything else at some location in the city. As far as maintaining the building we have, I personally believe that building should be converted to a pod and we should repurpose what we have in the existing building. And so I'm not really in favor of voting for this study. I kind of think we actually have the answers we need. we may be choosing to ignore them at the moment, but that's my opinion. So thank you.
Sounds like we're ready to vote. Mm-hmm. All those in favor of Resolution X with the changes that were made to the language, all of us, raise your hand, please. Opposed. That fails 5-2-8. All right. I'm going to call a 10-minute recess, please, and come on back quickly in 10 minutes so we can keep going. Thanks. We're back in session. I wanted to let everybody know that you all, we all got a notice about sexual harassment training. It came from Cantola Productions. You got it on June 26th, and some of us are getting multiples because you get one for every commissioner, board, or advisor board that you're on. That is, we need to each go through sort of a webinar thing. It's about an hour, hour and 15 minutes. So you're getting heads up to take the, set aside the time. We need to be certified as having all done that training by September 13th. Dan.
So I did get one. I thought it was just one email with the wrong name, and there was an email about that. I never got a follow-up as far as I know. Should I just do this offline? Or?
No, I think I started it.
Or can I do
it? And when I go into it, it's my own name. The subject line of the message was wrong, but the rest of it is correct. Okay?
Thank you. June 26th, you said.
Yeah. I've been meaning to resend it to everybody so you have it, like, at the top of your inbox, but I just want to make sure everybody takes time for that, Mike, and then Rich.
I did it, and it was not painful, a little long. It was because it's broken down into about a dozen or 15 segments. And there's a lot of video, you know, watching situations. They'll ask you a few basic questions to see whether you're really there or not. But it was worthwhile.
And you can do it a piece at a time, right? You don't have to do it all at once?
I did it all at once, but I don't know whether you can do a piece at a time or not.
Lisa says yes.
Okay.
And Ken. Rich?
I was just going to say I took it as well. It's done by Littler Mendelsohn, which is one of the premier employment law firms in the country. And I thought it was actually very well done. They use professional actors, and it does move along. It's not painful.
I agree.
Okay, great. I wanted to let you know that the Alliance for Non-Pipe Alternatives Group filed a petition to the Public Service Commission for a number of things that has to do with the Lansing moratorium and NYSEG's actions on that. A number of issues are still pending, but the first thing we asked for was that the deadline be delayed until for responses. They're going to have a forum in Lansing, probably September 11th, a breakfast meeting for commercial building owners and for vendors. And we wanted the response time to be after that. We got NYSEG to postpone that deadline. So the new deadline is September 27th for responses to the RFI, and our staff is working on that on the for the airport project. So, right?
Airport.
And the other buildings? And the other buildings.
The other buildings would include also any other municipal building in that moratorium, not just ours.
Great. Okay. So.
Knife on that.
Terrific. Yeah. All right. That's great. Katie and Mike and other and Andre are working.
Planning's doing a great job spearheading it.
Okay. So please to say that petition had one good outcome already, and then we had a long phone call the other day to be followed up with another phone call trying to work through the other issues in that petition. Deborah?
Oh, I just wondered if somebody might explain the difference between an RFI and an RFP.
I think basically the level of detail that you need to put into the proposal. And although the level of detail for the RFI is significant, it's not like you just put an outline in. You have to do a real proposal.
But apparently there's more to it for the RFP.
Yeah. I mean, my understanding of this process is the RFI, you know, is pretty much what would, for the lack of a better term, would be a letter, almost a, you know, equivalent to a letter of intent, and then basically they review that, and if they want you to go to the next stage of the game, then you can apply to the RFI, or RFP, I'm sorry. The RFI seems a little more in-depth than typical when you do these types of things, but this is pretty much the first phase of screening of review, and then I would imagine from there they'll take X amount of the RFI and suggest that they apply for the RFP for the actual funding.
Well, is it correct, because somebody mentioned this to me and I had never heard this before, that if they don't get a certain category of responses in any of the RFIs, then they will not include that category of actions in the RFP.
I don't know that.
Or is that not true?
I don't know the answer to that. I don't know if we can make...
Well, if it's literally a filtering that only the RFP respondents, you have to have responded to the RFI, then that would be true. If nobody said we want to do, you know, ground source heat pumps, then...
Then the RFI will come out with no ground source heat pumps.
The RFP, yeah.
Okay.
So we're working through a bunch of those issues. And Scott Smith from NYSERDA came here on Sunday and was here all the way through today. Was at a number of events with specific building owners and at a Lansing event, a Heat Smart event in Lansing. And you have on, I think we have the $80,000 for the business BEA program in Lansing on the agenda tonight. So that's exciting moving forward. While the meeting was happening earlier, I got a call from Cara Grippen in the governor's office. I've been nagging them about the home rule bill, the housing home rule bill. And she manages not to ask. She says, I have news. Give me a call back. Like, why couldn't you tell me what the news was? So I don't know what to tell you. I've called her back, and her mailbox is full. So I've texted her twice. If I get something before the meeting's over, I'll let you know.
It's probably good news. I mean,
hey, you think?
I don't know. Don't want to count my chickens. So that's what I have right at the moment. Anything? Any questions? Any other questions? All right. Thanks. Who are we up to? Jason, county administrator.
I'm not going to give you a report. It's late. I'll send out some more information. I'm sorry.
Okay.
Those are something specific you'd like to report on.
Why don't you just do Jonathan's, you know?
I already have given you more than Jonathan's.
It's
but,
true.
But Jonathan doesn't have a report either, and neither does Rick. So I've reported for all three of you.
All right, covered? Everybody done? Jonathan, you're done? You're good? Rick, you actually have a sentence or two. Go for it.
My report's in your packet, pages 18 to 24. And to keep it short, I was just going to tell you the sales tax, there's 2 months in there. And our sales tax is up year-to-date 4.61% as of the end of June. There's also a casino report in there that shows how we're doing so far this year. After two quarters, our casino revenues are up 8.1% year-over-year. That's it.
Where's the casino report?
In the packet.
In the packet.
The agenda packet.
It's on the back of page something, something.
Page. Yeah, back of
page. Oh, I see.
Page,
yep,
page
thank
20.
You.
Page 20.
All right.
At the bottom.
Thank you, Rick. Keep bringing in the money. All right. Are there any resolutions to be added to or withdrawn from the agenda?
Yes, I do have one withdrawal.
Bless you.
You're right.
It wasn't that.
Add that.
How do I spell it, Jonathan? Anna, go ahead, Anna.
I'm sorry. I am looking for the number of it.
Is that
off the
L?
L. Yes, thank you. Award of 2019 Strategic Tourism Implementation Grant, Ithaca-Tompkins County Convention and Visitor Bureau for Professional Services for Tourism Improvement District Formation. That's ID 8776. I'd like to withdraw it for it to come back at a future meeting.
Okay, thank you. Anything else from anybody? Okay, I'm going to sit down while I read the consent agenda because, you know, it's big. What do we got? Revised in your packet, revised resolution A, as revised by the Finance Director. Authorization to accept a grant from the New York State Department of Environmental Conservation for a food waste reduction and recycling project, ID 8754. Authorization to execute extensions of snow and ice agreements with the towns of Townsend Tompkins County, ID 8752. Resolution C, budget adjustment due to increased consolidated highway improvement program, CHIPS funding, extreme winter recovery apportionment, Highway Department, ID 8751. Resolution D, adoption of regular and supplemental reports of footings, totals, and assessment rolls, ID 8794. Resolution E, establishing county equalization rates, ID 8793. Resolution F, resolution urging the creation of a New York State task force to consider legislative amendments to address appraisal challenges based upon dark store theory, ID 8792. Resolution G, authorizing an amendment to the bylaws of the Tompkins County Historical Commission, resolution ID 8790. Resolution H, budget adjustment for Business Energy Advisors Lansing Program, ID 8770. Resolution I, negative declaration for authorizing disbursement from the Community Housing Development Fund for 1932 Slaterville Road, Habitat for Humanity of Tompkins and Cortland Counties, ID 8777. Resolution J, authorization to disperse county funds to the Community Housing Development Fund for 1932 Slaterville Road, Habitat for Humanity of Tompkins and Cortland Counties, ID 8778. Resolution K, acceptance of New York State Homes and Community Renewal Community Development Block Grant, Healthy Homes Rehabilitation Program number 3, ID 8780. Resolution M, authorizing 2019-1 Federal Transit Administration Section 5307 grant application for Tompkins Consolidated Area Transit, TCAT, and Tompkins County, ID 8774. Which one of these did we already do for?
Oh.
We did O. Okay. Authorize Resolution N, authorizing 2019 Federal Transit Administration Section 5339C low and no emission grant program grant application for Consolidated Area Transit, ID 8775. Resolution P, authorization of New York State Department of Transportation Mass Transportation Capital Project Agreement, Tompkins County and Tompkins Consolidated Area Transit, K007262, Supplemental Agreement 2, ID 8805. Resolution Q, budget transfer to cover shift in insurance costs for emergency communications towers, ID 8711. Resolution R, authorization to accept New York State Division of Community Criminal Justice Grant, Sheriff's Office, ID 8766. Resolution S, authorizing acceptance of Preventing the Cycle of Abuse and Violence in Young Families Grant and Execution of Associated Contracts, Department of Social Services, ID 8801. And Resolution T, authorizing acceptance of Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration, SAMHSA grant funds through Office of Court Administration for Family Treatment Court, related conference participation, Department of Social Services, ID 8802, and appointments.
Well done.
Yeah. Did you breathe?
Yes, I breathed. To the Developmental Disabilities Subcommittee, Catherine Boardman. To the Office for the Aging Advisory Committee, Joanne Isbicki. To the Public Information Advisory Board, Bruce Estes and Lenora Erica Mims. Can I get a motion on the consent agenda? Moved by Anna, seconded by Annie. All in favor, please raise your hand. Any opposed? That's unanimous. We just accepted a pile of money.
Yeah, we did.
Yeah.
They're like several millions in grants that we did. Wow, good job. Staff, good job. All right. Facilities and Infrastructure Committee, Dave McKenna, Chair.
Thank you. F and I met on July 18th. It seems like an eon ago, but nevertheless, we had a report from Jason on the 2020 capital plan. Mike Lane informed us that the DOT had to stop work on the new stoplight at Day Street because, of all things, the permit ran out and they can't work in the right-of-way for the railroad. until they get a new one. Jeff Dunn transferred from Department of Materials Management to the Department of Emergency Response with the title of Community Preparedness Coordinator. And thanks, Jeff, for all you did, and best of luck in your new position. And other than that, we had the three resolutions on the consent agenda, and that's my report.
Thank you, Dave. Any questions? So would that thing with the light, would that be Scott Bates from DOT called me and left a message, and I called and didn't get through. Does that ring any bells? Do you know Scott Bates? Is that okay. It's about some project in the county. Okay. All right. Thanks. All right. Government Operations Committee, Mike Lane, Chair.
We met August 1st. And most of what we did is taken up in these resolutions. I particularly want to mention one that we just passed on consent, and that was the dark store resolution asking the state to address that with a group. Jay Franklin has been probably one of the leaders statewide in his department with his department on this issue, and he told us that fortunately an inadequate bill had come to the legislature, and they were able to discuss that as far as holding that back, and now we want to see them proceed with this group that will study this and come up with some language having to do with how you equate dark stores to live stores as far as the value of the operations. Jay can speak to it if anybody wants to hear it better than I, but that's this is a big deal, and it's an important thing that it can cost not only our county but counties all over New York money. It's already costing counties all over the country money, so I want to congratulate our assessment department for doing that. If there are questions, I'll answer them, but that's basically what I wanted to mention. I've got one resolution, which is, of course, policies.
I have a question, Mike. Yeah. So is that going to NYSEC? I mean, the resolution will go to NYSEC in general. Is that something that will... Jay, are you going to be at the fall conference for NYSEC? You often have this conferences at the same time.
No, I'll be down. I'm on the Native American Affairs and Gambling Committee, so I'll be down there for that. But I did talk to Dave Lucas. Deb Dawson forwarded it off to Dave, and he's going to pass it along both internally and through the NYSEC committee structure.
Great. Okay, terrific. Thank you.
I can mention that, too.
Yeah, I'm on that committee, so good.
I'd like to move the revised as adopted by committee resolution U. And this resolution is not moving from, as was shown on the original agenda, the open meetings policy. We're going to take that back again for some more discussion at our next meeting. And I know Lisa Holmes is working on that as well. So we're going to just move tonight the resolution to update the administrative policy manual for policy 0814, oaths of office. Policy 0207, employment of relatives, that's nepotism, and policy 0703, video security systems, and I so move.
Seconded by Deborah. Questions? Mike, I'd ask you a question about the nepotism policy and the Board of Elections Department.
Yes, and I think Lisa's prepared to speak to that. If you would, please, Lisa.
So I had conversation about this earlier today with both Jonathan and Jason, and the feedback that I received was that subject to New York State law, the Board of Elections is unique and would probably have an exemption in every policy. So as opposed to putting it in this policy, we would just... you know, keep them exempt. Also, this policy references the Code of Ethics, and the Board of Elections is specifically mentioned in the Code of Ethics. So as in regard to the nepotism policy not applying like it does to other departments. So I think we're covered.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Lisa.
Are there any other questions on any of these? Ready to vote.
Yeah, I would just also point out on the video security system one that we did put in there a clause that we won't have facial recognition software operating in our county buildings. This does not include the airport or the public safety building, but we would not have those kinds of systems without specific authorization from this legislature.
All right, ready to vote? All in favor of resolution U, please raise your hands. Any opposed? That's unanimous. Thank you.
That's all I have.
All right. Thanks very much, Mike. Planning, Energy, Environmental Quality Committee, Deborah Dawson, Chair.
We had most notably Tony Ingraffio come and explain to us the relationship between the goals that were set forth in the CLCPA and how they meshed with our county's energy roadmap and energy strategy, and they seem to be fairly consistent. So it's not going to require any scrambling on our part. He did mention several ways in which the CLCPA is not the greatest piece of legislation ever written, but I guess we'll work on getting that corrected. There were some concerns about measuring certain criteria and using the improper units of measurement, for example. And I guess the most interesting piece of his presentation was discussing how the state is going to farm out to each county some kind of metrics or benchmarks for what they have to do to enable the state to meet all the goals that were set forth in the law. And that's going to be a tough one because, you know, there are certain specific requirements for solar and wind. And, you know, if you live in a county with no wind, or if you live someplace where the sun never shines, like Ithaca, for example, it's going to be kind of interesting to try to figure out how they're going to apportion that. But stay tuned for more exciting developments.
Thanks, Deborah. Any questions? Okay, I've got Budget, Capital, and Personnel Committee. Mike Lane, Chair.
We haven't met since the last time. Michelle, when do we meet?
Next Friday.
We've already taken the resolution that we had, that we did that to begin with. So that's all the report I have.
I was trying. Thanks. There's no news.
Are we interrupting you?
That was the state person again. Sorry. I thought maybe I'd get some news. She says there's no news.
So I don't know. Well, that's the news.
She texted you and said she...
No, she called again. I don't know why she can't text. Never mind. We're in public. I'm on television. I know that they watch. No, they don't. Sorry, Mike. Go ahead.
I completed it because we don't have a meeting. I don't have a report. Our meeting is next Friday, so we've already done our resolution W.
Thank you very much. Sorry about that. Maybe we'd get some news. All right, Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee. Leslie McBean, Claire Bourne, Chair.
The Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee will meet on August 28th.
All right. Good. Thank
Annie
you.
Annie has something else to add because Annie has been... heading up.
Just a reminder about we're going on a jail tour tomorrow. It started with the LGBTQ law enforcement committee, but we've expanded it to other committees, so I think there's like 15 of us, 14 something going tomorrow, and so I hope everybody brought your sleeping bags. We'll be sleeping on the floor, I think, right here and leaving in a couple hours.
Thanks, Amy, for arranging that.
Thank you for arranging that, and it will be, I'm sure, very enlightening, and I'll meet you in Binghamton. I'll see you there. Okay.
So, Anna, Martha, if I went, you were asking, why are we going? Okay.
It doesn't matter.
Okay. All set, workforce, diversity, inclusion?
We are set.
Okay. Thank you. Housing and Economic Development Committee, Anna Kellis, Chair.
Well, I have a few things. There's been a lot of discussion in a lot of different arenas that I've been a part of, that some of you may have been a part of as well. But there are a lot of changes that have happened with a state law on tenants' rights and protection that are confusing and nuanced. So I have asked a lawyer who specializes in housing issues from Law New York to come and present to us. And the agenda has just been published. It is on our website. And it has his presentation as well as some summaries about the legislation. He will be presenting at a special HED meeting on Monday evening, the 12th, at 5:30 at the Legislative Chambers. We will also have a presentation from Barbara, and I will probably butcher her last name, so I'm going to let her offer her last name when she speaks on Monday night. But she is the person that the paralegal that we hired through a position we all created with an OTR last year to address the issue of evictions. It was a support in Law New York. And she is also going to give a presentation. So for anyone interested in tenant protection rights and changes to rental policies, that will be Monday night. The other thing I wanted to point out in the agenda packet from the last meeting that we just had, we had an amazing presentation from Julia Maddock and Martha Armstrong on the labor market. And I'll just mention a few highlights that I thought people might be interested in. One of them that I think a lot of us know is that although unemployment has been on the decline, we have, and there's predicted and continued divergence between the job need in our county and the labor market in our county. So that is a dangerous situation to be in. We are all probably familiar with the areas of the greatest growth, which are high technical industries, healthcare, and education in this area. But one of the things that I found very interesting is that we have a particularly high amount of the population that could be in the labor force but is not in the labor force. And of that group that could be in the labor force that is not in the labor force, 26% of them have a college education or higher. Instantly, some of us on committee, of course, the first thing that we would think of, which was confirmed by the presenters, was that the high cost of and inaccessibleness of childcare is one of the biggest reasons, because a very high percentage of those people in that age group were women. And are unable to join the workforce because of the cost of childcare as well as the cost of transportation. And the third thing that was mentioned was the cost of housing. All of those three being highly correlated, living far away from childcare and not necessarily having consistent transportation if you're sharing a car, one car of the entire family. So those were some of the things that were brought up. There are a bunch of other things that were brought up. For example, poverty data, 2007 being the most recent data. There were 660 families in poverty in Tompkins County in the 2000 census, headed by single mothers. The 2017 census, 920 were headed by single mothers. So that group is increasing, and that is not necessarily a good thing. So these are some pieces. The intention and reason why I asked for this data was because we in the committee are trying to delve in further into the labor labor data and put a greater focus on workforce development. Where should our funding be going? Where should our focus be? And without this data, it's very hard to prioritize that. So I highly encourage anybody to, all of you, to look at that packet that was last month's. And hopefully I'll see you all on the 12th.
So Monday night at 5:30 here? Okay. Thanks very much. Any questions for Anna? Okay, complete census count committee, Mike Lane, chair.
Yeah, we met on Monday had a very good meeting, even though we lacked a quorum. We weren't able to complete a couple of things, but we had a great group, and we talked about planning for our big meeting, community meeting, which will happen August 13th at 5:30 p.m. at TCPL, the Borg Warner Room. And you're all invited, if you'd like to come and learn, from Kate Dillon from the Census Bureau is going to give a presentation. We'll also have a presentation from the library. Libraries will be heavily instrumental in the full count going into next year. Also hear from Greg Potter. We'll talk a little bit about our website and our IT efforts and the possibility of we're working on a virtual mobile electronic computer system to have an outreach to communities and community centers and other places where people need to have access to computers and can get some help to be able to file their census as they're supposed to. And our next meeting will happen in, I think, the 9th of September.
Thank you, Mike. Any questions? So that's a week from tonight, the public library at 5:30. Appreciate that. Thanks. Downtown Facilities Committee, Glenn Morey, chair.
Thank you. First of all, I want to thank Jay Franklin for setting up a tour on July 16th of the North Tioga Street complex. There is 12 out of 14 legislators showed up. It was very well attended. The committee met on July 22nd. And was advised that the closing date is now around November 30th, and this is due to the expiration of the dental practice lease. All other leases in the buildings run from a month-to-month basis. Title issues are have been around for decades will be worked on during this period, and Jay Franklin has been assigned to the point person purchase contract issues. Jason presented the committee a proposal of how the county might provide parking for county employees after the closing. Jason pointed out that 110 employees need parking spaces. The courthouse has approximately 65 spaces. Approximately 79 spaces exist in the North Tioga complex. If we assign parking spaces to management and legislatures in the North Tioga complex, we would free up a lot of space here at the court complex. However, we're still going to have an agreement with the union of management. We also have to do some surface patching and lighting, which is estimated about $3,000. The committee reached an informal consensus that a decision must be made about the Red House on 408 North Tioga Street, whether it should be renovated, subdivided, off, or demolished. The decision would affect the footprint of the proposed new building and parking. The committee was told by the court administration will need all the space in the county courthouse, but the clerk's office and DA's can stay there during the development of our new facilities. Jason reported that the court system will make interim courthouse facilities arrangements for our new third court judge. Our next meeting will be held Thursday, August 8th, here in the chambers. Hold Architects will be here to report on the comparable cost to renovate 408 and also discuss our scenarios.
I'm sorry, discuss what?
The scenarios.
Okay. Thank you, Glenn. Deborah.
Can we demolish the Red House? I thought it was...
We're going to discuss it.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
If the Red House costs about $2 million to renovate, if you looked up the eaves, all dry rot...
Oh, no, I'm not questioning that, but I thought it was some sort of historically significant structure.
You can demolish it. It's in a historic district.
Okay.
You can.
Thank you.
Thank you, Glenn. Any other questions for Glenn? Okay, great. Appreciate that. Public Safety Committee, Rich John, Chair.
Thank you, Martha. Public Safety Committee met on July 24th, I have one resolution. It's Resolution Y, authorization for a public hearing allowing deer and bear rifle hunting in Tompkins County. And I'd put it on the floor.
Seconded by Anna. Discussion?
This was the result of a fairly extensive discussion we've been having about asking New York State to change the rules for Tompkins County to align with all the counties around us. And, in fact, most of the counties in the state, I think there's 7 or 8 counties that do not allow rifles to be used during the 2-week period in late November, early December for deer and bear hunting. Rifles are allowed for other types of hunting, but not deer and bear. And we received a request from some hunters and have since heard from several more. We had a captain from the DEC come to our last meeting, and I thought he was very helpful in giving us information on the subject. But we agreed at the committee level that having a public hearing would be a very good idea, just to make sure the public was aware of what we were considering.
Dan, and then Anna.
Is there a resolution that goes along with this? Is this a regular public hearing, or is this a different type of public hearing? Usually have a public hearing about a law that, you know, there's a written law.
It's not a local law public hearing. It's just a public hearing. We wanted to get public input.
Before even moving forward.
So it's not a public hearing in the legal sense. Am I right?
We're a legal body and we're having a public hearing, but no.
Jonathan?
Okay. There's no requirement that you have a public hearing as there is for passing a local law.
Okay.
But obviously you can have a public hearing on anything you want. And so there's no legal requirement. I just think the committee thought it was good.
Okay. I just wanted to be clear. We're not having a public hearing on a law that we will then submit. We want the public to speak about this subject.
Correct. And in fact, we can't determine this issue. We have to make a request to New York State. If we voted positively that we wanted, it would be a resolution requesting New York State to change its law.
I have one more question. I don't know if you can answer this. Do you know if we wanted to, I guess you're saying we have to send a request to New York State. If we wanted to, could we say that we want rifle hunting for deer but not bear? Do you know?
Yes, we could.
I don't know. But it sounds like Jason is making head motions.
I don't think you can, but we can definitely ask the follow-up. I don't think you can differentiate. I don't think you can start to pick and choose. Big game is big game. I don't know if you can start to pick and choose, like, you only want it for coyotes, but you don't want it for them. But we can ask. I don't know. I'm fairly certain you can.
I'd be interested in that question if somebody has access to someone who is able to answer that. Thank you.
Anna?
I thought I got that, but now you're making me doubt myself, so I'm going to wait until you get that information.
Yeah, I will ask the captain, the DC captain.
One of the things that I'm working on right now, Shauna and I both really wanted this because it's really heated and there are a lot of emotions around guns in general, I can't 100% speak for Shauna, you can add, but my sentiment was that we felt that they should have the right to weigh in on this one, given that, and you're nodding, I'm glad, that given that it would potentially increase the number of guns in the community. The one thing, you know, there were two big issues that came up that I appreciated, and one person brought it up today, and I was really glad he did bring it up, which is the research on the accuracy of rifles versus shotguns, and that rifles are more accurate, and so potential suffering to animals could be less if we allowed for rifles. But the one piece that I wanted to add, because I don't want to discuss this right now, is that there's information that I will be gathering that I will share with all of you. One of the things that was interesting or I was curious about was that the state park system does not allow rifles, and that is because they don't want long-range a long range in areas where there may be hikers. What I am unclear about in Tompkins County is, and I'm going to be building a map overlay of municipalities and then the, by state law, 500-foot distance from all buildings, which is a requirement that there are no gun, no rifles used in those ranges, overlaying the state parks, and then overlaying the non-state trails that we have that go through Tompkins County, including the Appalachian Trail, et cetera, with a 500-foot buffer on both sides. And then I'll disseminate that map, because if there's very little land left in the county after all of that is overlaid, that probably answers our question. But it is not a black and white topic or discussion or issue.
Deborah?
I have a question. In the hearings that you've had on this subject, has anybody been able to give a definitive answer? Is most buckshot lead?
There's both steel and lead, to my understanding.
Okay. Thank you.
Anything else for public safety?
I think we need to vote on the resolution.
Oh, right. Okay. All right. All in favor of the resolution? Any opposed? All right. Public hearing next meeting. I just want to thank all the people who worked on the, before we move away from the possible consolidated facility, shared facility, I want to thank Rich and Jason and the sheriff and the other sheriff. And who else was it that worked, Jason, on that or on that committee?
Mara and Lisa Holmes was part of the discussion. I also know from the city side, the city attorney, police chief, plan director was part of the discussion.
I just want to thank everybody for taking a great deal of time to try to present us with some options, and I think it's a really important step to have taken. Thank you very much. Health and Human Services Committee, Shauna Black, Chair.
Thanks, Martha. We welcomed J.R. Claiborne to his first HHS meeting as our new Director of Veteran Services. He started the Monday before our meeting, which took place August 2nd, and his position is actually going to be housed out of the COFA building on State Street. We also thanked the spirit of Leslyn McBean Claiborne. She was not at the meeting, but we thanked her for her many years of being on HHS and her dedication towards all things health and human services. So thank you very much. We also talked and thanked Reverend Ken and the Office of Human Rights for hosting two really incredible events in July. The first one was Stonewall Uprising, and Annie and myself attended that, and it was very... Oh, Henry, Anna, sorry. Sorry, guys. It was just me and Annie. Anyway, it was very, very well attended. It was a great movie. There was discussion afterwards. There were some good munchies, too. And then the following week was the Audre Lorde movie, which Amanda, anyone else attended that? And Annie attended. And from what I heard, it was standing room only. At the Cinemopolis Movie Theater. So that's really good to hear that people are interested in these events. It's giving education to our community, and to hear that it's a packed house is shows that it's really successful. We have also had a few meetings with our Human Rights Commission. The most recent one involved Martha, Henry, Jason, Amy, and myself. We talked about the charter revisions that seemed to be quite controversial in our last legislature meeting. There has been a working group that's been established that will be meeting, I believe, towards the end of this week.
Is that right? Next week.
Oh, next week, with our county attorney to discuss some of their proposed revisions to the charter. We will more than likely see that in a September meeting, just to give everyone the heads up. I also want to update everyone on the commissioner review process that is occurring with mental health and public health. Myself, as well as three members from Board of Health and three members from Community Service Mental Health Board, have been meeting every other week and will continue to do so throughout the summer. We have just finalized the metrics that we will be using to evaluate the position and see how we would like to move forward.
Okay. Any questions for Shauna? Dan.
Could you send those metrics around?
I think that's fine. Yeah. It'd be is that right?
The mental health ones?
The metrics, the forms that we're using in order to evaluate the position?
Okay.
Is that...
I'm not recalling that. I'm sorry.
The laundry list that we're using to look at if this position is...
I think we have the metrics that were identified. Am I missing something, Amy? I'm sorry. Yeah, maybe I'm missing this. I'm sorry.
I think we could do the metrics that were identified by the Mental Health and Public Health Board, not with all of the right. notes that we've put into it at this point. I think that's probably internal team notes, but the metrics that they identified that we're using, yes.
Sorry.
That's okay.
I didn't. I got you.
It's late.
Yes, we can do that.
Okay. Thank you.
Sorry.
Okay. That's it.
All right. Thanks, Sean. Any questions? All right, thank you very much. I would take a motion for the minutes of July 16th, 2019. Amanda moves, seconded by Shauna. Any comments, yeah. Amanda?
I just have one word correction on page 125 in something that I said. On the first line, it's not unseated, it's unseated. D-E-D-E-D.
Okay, you can give that kind of stuff to Kathy. And okay.
1 second.
All right, great. I got a couple of those, too. All right.
Duly noted.
What?
All right.
Duly noted.
Thank you. Yeah.
D-O-O-L-E-Y.
Good point.
Okay, all in favor of the minutes, please raise your hands. Any opposed? That's unanimous. Thank you. I just have one other piece. I got a hard copy notice about the Public Service Commission hearing on the NYSEG rate case, and with 4 pages of explanation of what's in the rate case. Happy to make copies for anybody who wants it.
Yes.
And that hearing is next Wednesday at the Public Library, Borg Warner Room, 1 o'clock. They'll do a public information. 2 o'clock, they will take comments. So Marcia's been very helpful in getting that word spread around, and we want to make sure people say whatever they need to say. All right. Can I get a motion to go into executive session to talk about real estate and then to talk about personnel issues on a specific person? Moved by Annie, seconded by Deborah. All in favor, please raise your hands. Any opposed? All right, that's unanimous. I do not expect us to take action after coming out of executive session. Let us take a 5.5-minute break and then come back. Thank you.